Good evening. Today is Monday, February the 13th, 2012. It is 5:37, and this is an instruction, personnel, policy, student services committee. Tony, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mr. Coronado?
Okay. First item on the agenda, please.
Texas Teacher Alternative Certification Program, Dr. Murphy and Ms. Salami.
Chairperson Gonzalez, committee members, members of the board, audience. I have with me here Blair Salome of the of the Texas Teachers Alternative Certification Program. She has a person in her program named Sarah Brown, who is currently working as an academic tutor at Alderete Middle School, who is endeavoring to become a teacher, and she needs to do her student teaching. We have Board Resolution 20084 in green paper in front of you, which says that student teachers will first go to students coming out of UTEP, NMSU, other university programs, and or the Regional Service Center, Region 19, and that they get first priority. And I'm here to just let the board know that I have no imminent requests from the universities or Region 19 for student teachers. Sarah Brown is doing well at Alderete. Marnie Rocha vouches for her, and we have no problem with her serving as a student teacher under this resolution. And Ms. Salome is here as representing the organization of the Texas Teachers Alternative Certification. Just wanted to let you know that we're going to be in compliance if we offer Ms. Brown a student teacher position. And the student teacher position is just that. It has no pay attached to it, and it has no expectation of employment after the student teaching is over, unless we have a position and she interviews and is able to obtain it.
Okay. Any questions?
Okay. I'll let Ms. Brown know tomorrow that she can move forward with the student teaching.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tony.
Review of grant submissions for Music Matters and Family Literacy Program implementation. Ms. Sumina. Hello, members of the board. I don't think this is the first time that I've been in front of you all, but I think it is underway over. But I can review the information. There's two grants that are being proposed. One of them is for the music program. It's up to $6,000. Mr. Gumbel has, I don't know if in your copies you can see that in the draft, but the submission has to be in by the 17th. And it would fund instructional materials for the music program for Alderete Middle School. And it could also provide funding for some instruments. That's up to $6,000. That's the Music Matters grant. And then there's a family literacy grant in coordination with Ms. Correa. The funding for that could be up to $50,000. Is there any questions related to any of those grants?
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Who wrote the Music Matters grant?
I'm sorry?
Who wrote the Music Matters
grant? Mr. Gomes. He provided most of the information.
It is magnificent.
Yes.
I cried. I mean, just sobbing, crying when I read this.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I mean, just fabulous. So if you could pass that on.
Okay, great. I'll let him know. The literacy grant, you'll see that there's no application there yet. It requires board approval before we can even access the application. And the deadline for that is March 5th.
So we'll bring that on February 21st?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Mendels?
I have a question.
Sure.
The literacy, family literacy program, implementation grant, what campus is that targeting? Or is it targeting?
That would be district-wide.
District-wide.
Well, it's because it would be family literacy that would engage parents. With their children, And it could also involve children age 0 to grade 3.
If we get this grant, will it be run through the Sabandaj?
Yes, through the Students of Hartford. We currently do have funding for a family literacy grant through two agreements with the PISD. Those would be the TANF and L Civics grants. And we do expect those to continue next year as well.
I have a question.
Sure.
You said 0 to 3. How does this affect the Head Start?
In particular, we haven't been able to answer the application because of that. But in the information provided in there, it provides pre-literacy program, so it would help engage the children to be able to become literate once they enter the schools. But if you'll see in the document from the internet on that first area, it'll help create a family literacy program. In our case, it'll expand it. And it'll allow for any innovative projects related to any literacy programs. But it could potentially fund training, additional classes offered through Ms. Correa, which is, I believe they already do 15 hours a week. They do some morning classes and they also do some evening classes. But it could expand to be able to use the funds for some additional classes or just expand the scope of it. Currently, we do have funding for academic tutors, like I said, through EPISD, and one full-time position. So currently, there is some funding for that. It's a total of about $90,000. But this will expand the program even more. And Ms. Correa believes that she has enough of a population to be able to provide some additional support for additional families.
So yes. This would work in conjunction with the Even Start program that we currently have right now, or that's
we don't have any
that's gone already.
Yeah, it is similar to the Even Start program. Yes.
Okay, and in this, would they need to hire more staff, or they work with what they already have, or
they could potentially work with what we already have, but we could potentially hire academic tutors, which would be temporary, not a full-time position.
Okay.
It'll depend on what the needs are of the program, and we haven't been able to answer the application, but it could potentially fund that. If you'll see in that second document, and that exhibit, it'll help create the literacy program, expand the existing literacy program, and allow for any additional projects that they want to implement.
Okay.
But
okay, that's helping. Thank you.
Yeah, I was gonna say, reasonable cost would include any meals and snacks for any meetings or during the classes, for training, testing materials, conferences, grant orientation meetings, and outside evaluators.
Okay.
Any other questions? No. Okay. Thank you. We're not taking any action right now, so.
Is there a recommendation?
Right.
Madam Chair, it's my recommendation that we recommend it to the board.
We've taken up a new format. It's just at the top.
Oh.
Thank you.
Okay.
So we don't make that mistake we made last.
Thank you.
Okay. Item C is Renaissance Math Review, Ms. Guerra. She doesn't have a hand up.
Thank you.
Board President Charles, board members, and Dr. Murphy. I just wanted to talk to you, based on the request of a little bit about accelerated math and math facts in the flash, the Renaissance products that we have in our elementary and middle school campuses. I provided Two of them were included in your board packet, and then I added one to student data, and also some more information.
So, Pam, part of this was in Friday's packet?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you just added the back, is it the back page?
I added the second and the third page.
The second and third page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Basically, we have had progress. If you look at the table, it's describing the progress of student usage that we had, and this is based on the last 3 days at each elementary and middle school. Again, this product was selected by a district and campus committee with, when I had brought it to the board with the principals, with the instructional coordinators on the campuses, with the directors, and with some of the executive directors. And this was, there was a district-wide initiative to have an intervention in mathematics, because it's not something that we had systemically in our district. So we wanted to bring something to the table as a resource for teachers. We also wanted it to be strategic, so we all agreed to purchase 100 licenses per campus. Because for one, we want to be strategic and targeted, and number two, we didn't want to invest in something brand new that we didn't know how it was going to work. And since we have other products usually that we buy for every student to have access to, we really wanted this to be a targeted intervention for only students that need it, which it can also be about 15% of the population, which is usually, with our response to intervention, about the amount of population that will need a Tier 2 intervention. So we based our number on that. The benefits of the program have been, or are, that you start a student where they are. We have an 8th grade student who tested in at a 1st grade level, so we know that that student definitely needs accelerated intervention. That student is already at risk for dropping out. So this product, that's the benefit of it. It allows them to start their current ability level. And you can either start at the ability level or one grade prior, because these students, imagine all the failure they've experienced already. So they're pretty beaten up about math. So we want them to experience success and to keep that going and have them have accelerated instruction with it. We've had some challenges with it. We've had, as far as technology, it's a technological program where the students, the answer sheets are printed. So, I mean, not the answer sheets, I'm sorry, but the worksheets are printed. The student does the work and then can input either their answers on a keyboard or in clickers. It then reads the data and lets the teacher know, now where are they? Do they still need some more work with here, or can we progress into the next level? So because there's some software involved, and also the number of licenses that were limited, with 100 students, so deciding which those 100 students were going to be, when is the best, trying to get it into the instructional school day, because intervention research shows should happen during the instructional school day. We want true progress to happen, because if we make it at any other time, then we're dealing with parent lottery, teacher lottery, which teachers will stay after school to do it, which parents will allow a student to stay after school to do it. So, it's going to be based on the luck of the draw. So we want to make sure that every student has access to it. So we're really working toward making that happen with a structured intervention. One of the things that the program allows for as well is, because it's supposed to be a targeted intervention, the teacher can watch the students do the work. So if we have a fourth grader at a second grade level, then if we watch them do the work, then we know what is the misconception, where are they making the mistakes, which is a benefit to the program, as opposed to just having a computer program where they're just putting in A, B, C, or D, and you really can't see what the problem is. So we want them to do that, to put in their answers so the teacher doesn't have to grade it, but we want them to give the opportunity for the student to show the work. which is why we have the printed answer sheets, which poses another challenge, with ink and paper and that sort of thing. So I've been working with the principals. We've ordered some ink for two campuses based on that feedback, and I'd let the principals know again today. Let us know if you need some more support with that, so that we can provide that support to make it happen. Another one of the challenges, it's the higher a student goes without getting targeted intervention to close the gaps early, the bigger the wider the gaps get. So when you have students in middle school that are 8th, 7th grade at an elementary school level, so you have an 8th grade, a 7th grade teacher working with students at 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 3rd level, 7th grade level, all in one class, it's really hard to address all their needs when you have such a wide range. So one of the things we're working with the principals is how can we structure students, for example, in group 1, maybe they're 2nd through 4th grade level, and those students will go to this teacher. And then, 5th through 6th, 5th and 6th grade level, and the 7th and 8th grade level. So that their range isn't so wide when they're dealing with such a wide range of students with the same. But again, that comes with structuring the intervention, and that comes in the planning process and learning from our mistakes. So how do we get better at this? The next step is, just continued support of the campus, continued monitoring, continuing with training and staff development, just getting feedback from the campuses and monitoring, looking at the student data to see, where do we need to go out and support? We have Rosetta Sanchez now who's getting feedback, is a great supporter of the campuses and knows this program very well and can assist teachers on implementation of the program and monitoring student progress. If you look at the second page, Ms. Rivera, this is one of her students, and I'm going to let her talk a little bit about the student, where the student came in, and the progress that the student has had so far using accelerated math.
If you look at the second page, we tested the student on September 21st, 2011. Then a month later, I gave him the STAR mapping. You can obviously see there was progress. Then today, I tested him again, and I cannot tell you, he is functioning right now at 3.9. He lacks, I'm sorry.
The GE is what she's talking about, where the student on 921 was at a second month level, and then the second test was given in October, and that student was at a 2.8 grade level, and then yesterday was at a 3.9.
So the 612 equals a 3.9 on the bottom.
It's a scale score, yeah, the scale score, but then the GE is the grade equivalent.
So he's functioning at...
He's what grade level?
Fifth grade. He's a fifth grade.
Came in at second grade level and is now almost a fourth grade level. So he's had...
And I cannot tell you, this program is phenomenal. Mrs. Spears says, it's a good targeted intervention. It's a supplement to everything else we do. It shows where the student is functioning. It also shows progress and growth. And not only that, this program gives a teacher data to work with. We know where the student is weak at, we know where we need to target, and those objectives that they have mastered, then we just move on. There's no sense in spending down time on something that they have already mastered. So, we just keep on giving them the diagnostic test. It's just phenomenal, I cannot tell you. Like I said, if you look back at the dates, from that date on to now, he's made a year's growth. And numbers don't lie.
And part of it is the difference between this and just a regular tutoring or a homework center is, sometimes students will show up after school tutoring and they'll get help on whatever assignments they have that day. But it doesn't really show progress. Like a program that can input data consistently will show, this student is having growth. So, this happens to be a special ed student, so this is information that we can now take to the next ARD and show, the student, whatever his ability, because we don't want to get too much into, but the student is learning. The student does not have a learning disability, and so if we can bring this to the table,
you know, before we refer a student to special education, because you have your tier one where every student receives tier one intervention. That should hit about 85% of your students. Then about 50% are going to need just a little bit more, a little extra. That'll be about 15% of your students. Your tier three can start considering special education. So that's when a student has a learning disability and needs additional supports. Well, we can see here that this student is learning with the right support. So this student, you know, maybe eventually could even be exited, you know, based on the proper support, or at least be given, be provided this intervention that we know that this is working for this child. So this is good data to bring to the table with our students and our teams, before we refer a student to special ed, that we there are some things that are working that didn't maybe not work in the regular classroom, or at least we're able to catch the student up, because the whole purpose is accelerated instruction. So by the end of the year, this fifth grader, maybe we can get him to a 5.9 level, so he's ready for sixth grade. And now our middle school, the gaps are being closed early. The earlier we can get them, the smaller the gaps, the more targeted, the better our middle schools are going to be for now taking them above and beyond. I'm going to go ahead and let you speak about that.
I want to also let you know that, you know, when the student is working on this, and like she was saying, it's got clickers. The kids are so excited. It's positive and reinforcement immediately. They want to see what they did, you know, and then if they see that they, you know, they didn't master it, then there's another option on the software that takes them through the steps. You know, the teacher will click on this little square and it prints out step by step. It's visual for the student. So they follow those steps, you know, by themselves. So it's absolutely wonderful, you know. So that's another thing that they're able to see.
And right now what I would really like to say also is we're still in the learning process. This is still brand new to us. This is the first year we're using it. We're still finding challenges, but it's something that is working for our kids, specifically for those kids that need intervention. We want to make sure we take a proactive role, and this is what we're doing to make sure that they don't go into 504, they don't go into SPED, so we got to use everything we have in our hands. One of our challenges, wow, when do we do this? During instruction time? Is it going to take more time away? What are we going to do? See, there was, and that's just one little part that we had. But we're able, now we're settling. We're like, oh no, we can use it during this time. Big key, academic tutors. Our academic tutors are coming in, they're actually pulling them out, they're also doing the diagnostics, and they're also talking to our teachers. So they're both like on the same page, so our kids can move forward and they can talk to each other, what objectives, what do we need to do, how can we transfer this over to the classroom. So there's a lot of things that are being worked on, and we're still facing it. So to make a decision right now of, oh, let's stop, it's like we're just completing it halfway. We're not going through a full spectrum of trying this program. So I really do like the program. I'm not saying we're going to be using accelerated math all day long in the classroom. It's really for our targeted students that they need help with. We have weekend warriors on Saturday. They also use them during the Saturday tutoring sessions. So it's just a matter of how we approach it. And that's what we're kind of finding out. What is the best way to use this program? You know, what is the best way? You know, and that's what we're kind of working out. We're finding good solutions. We're working with each other. Principals are talking to each other. We talk to our people. Of course, I've talked to Ms. Rivera, who happens to be from BC. She loves it. She's a go-getter, and she loves, I mean, we want to pilot something, let's ask her, you know, because she loves to pilot some stuff. But our teachers are more reluctant. The leaders that Pam has, our team leaders, Ms. Rosa Cereceres, Nelly Sanchez, they have been really good about coming out to our campuses. And they work with PLC. They work with our teachers during their PLC so they can get comfortable, so they can navigate through accelerated math. And they're still working at it. They're still going to come out and do math facts. They're going to work with our teachers so they can get comfortable with the program. It's tough. It's tough when you're not used to using a program, a computer-based program. So with that kind of support, we're actually going on. And that's what teachers are looking for. They don't want this one-day training. It is tough when you do a one-day training. What are you going to get? I mean, so much to absorb. So if it's a follow-through and ongoing throughout the year, it's a learning process. And now we feel like, okay, we're getting support. We know where we're supposed to go. We know what to do for our kids. So that's what we're looking at, you know. But thank you. Thank you.
And we purchased this in the spring, last school year.
and use it for summer school. And one of the things that Renaissance has done for us, because they realize it's been a new program and the implementation has been, you know, it's not been the easiest, you know, program to implement, but we're starting to see successes with it now. And right now, they've extended it 6 months for us for free because they know, so we don't have to renew until October. So we get to use it for summer school again, and we get to still work on through the spring on the implementation and, you know, making sure that when we start the next school year, we already have it, we have it down. We know, you know, how to make it work. And, you know, we know about the amount of paper and the ink it's going to take so that we can be able to make sure that that's available. Because we, you know, the last thing we want is for teachers to be frustrated, and that's the first thing that will really block implementation. And so we're, you know, we really are striving to avoid that and be supportive with that. So, and that's one of the ways that Renaissance has helped us with that, is they've given us till October with this contract.
Any questions? Any questions? Mr. Coronado.
I have a question. On the graph that you provided us, or the table, in reference to the math scores on the AEIS indicators. And I know we're just using it this year and stuff, but it's interesting to note that at the middle schools, we have an issue with, we seem to be going down after each grade in terms of the percentage that meet the expectations, and at the high school level, we have the reverse. The percentages go up.
Yes. Let's look at that. If we're looking at this data, student score for AEIS indicators, basically what this is, mathematics data in my district from last year's class.
Right.
And what I wanted to show is if you look at met expectations, okay, that's how many pass. That's the percentage that passed the test. But as we move to STAR, okay, so if you look at my hands for a second, here's tax. Here's a bar of tax right here, of level of difficulty. We have the questions from here to here. STAR is moving it over to where our lower level questions are being removed, and then they're adding that college readiness piece where now we can look, because tax really assessed, it was really about passing, but our higher achieving students, they get commended and beyond, but we really can measure growth with them. STAR is meant to measure growth of our higher achieving students as well. So when we look at, for example, the accelerated math program is not meant to be to the level of STAR, right? Because if they're an eighth grade student and they're at a fourth grade level, we're just trying to catch them up with their skills and their basic reading of reading mathematics problems. And then the STAR level will come within the classroom. But if we look at met expectations at the different campuses, but then we look at commended, that's what we need to be looking at for STAR. What are our commended performances? And if we don't close the gaps early and consistently, if we don't work with students consistently to get them up to par, we're going to struggle with STAR. And so we needed to put some you know, structures in place to provide those supports to campuses. And again, it's a matter of getting it worked out to where, you know, we can really hit the targeted intervention.
So Pam, what about that drop in middle school, 6th, 7th, 8th, and then the rise in the high school?
Well, those gaps are going to increase. Again, the gaps are increased in the middle school. For example, in 6th grade math, we had 71% of the student expectations that were taught and tested for the first time. So they didn't have a lot of building up to it. And you're having these huge gaps with fractions and decimals with rational numbers that it's really is so, the concepts are so deep and complex that alone will cause your drop. And then it's just building them up from then. Now remember, our 9th and 10th grade and 11th grade tax test, our 9th grade tax was half algebra 1, but the other half was 8th grade, so half of it was reviewed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and since we, and again, our passing rates in 9th grade and freshman just across the state is really, it's another dip, because now it's a new environment, the transition, because, you know, you have those transition years that are just difficult in themselves. they're like going from contained classes in the middle school to now, you know, seeing every teacher and just a lot of adjustments being made. In addition to the extra student expectations. So in ninth grade, if we're targeting in 10th and 11th, if we're targeting those student expectations that are tested, if half of it's review, then we can, you know, we can do that and then get that bump up. So
it seems like the transition, though, is affecting, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I should have.
No, go ahead.
It seems like the transition, though, is affecting the middle schoolers more than it is the high schoolers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to.
Which leads us to believe that maybe what's going on at the middle school is at the first or the second year, their second year, that's where the scene, where I seem to see both in both middle schools that we have a drop. So I don't know whether it's, you know, when did the assessment on this, for example, that this would be the result from the March or April test, right?
April test, yes.
Which means they've already been in there the first year, the sixth graders have, almost the whole year. Doesn't seem to affect those, them.
Can you show me what data exactly you're looking at?
Yeah, if you look in the back page.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you look, it says the April 2011 mathematics.
Yes.
AEIS indicators.
Are we looking at to middle?
Can you feel how it starts at the top, high school, middle school, early college, high school, and then
other yes. Okay.
If you look at the all at both middle schools, the sixth grade, their percentage of meeting expectations is pretty high.
Yes.
And then it drops.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And you look at the high school, the percentages, you know, are fairly decent on the first year or with the ninth graders, but they all increase.
Yes.
So you have a cascade down at the middle and then a cascade back up yes. at the high.
So it seems that the transition doesn't seem to be affecting our sixth graders that much
as,
or
yes,
our ninth graders. It seems to be something's happening after their first year. And I don't know what that, we need to maybe.
Yeah, really look at that and see.
So I don't think that it's the transition's affecting them because they seem to be doing okay that first year they transition.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
I get that now that with the star we're going to have those percentages at the bottom are going to drop in terms of the commended. I get that because
well,
we're going to have the readiness content in the exam. But
yes.
But. Is that very dissimilar from the PSAT and the SAT that they're not going to be able to?
Well,
I mean, is the college readiness content or component of the STAR similar to our SAT?
It's going to be. That's what they're, like, for example, they're setting the performance standards right now. Based on what they did is at the college level, they gave the Algebra 2 test and the English 3 test
yeah.
to freshmen coming into college to set the norms for, but and they are including the norm reference tests, such as the ACT and the SAT, to make the questions more aligned to that
so,
at the Algebra 2 and English 3 level.
So what I don't get from the state is if we have the NAEP and we have the SAT and those issues already for college readiness or those indicators
mm-hmm.
are even the acuplacers. Why do we need the R and STAR? Can you give any sense of why the state's putting that component other than Texas wants to be have it and not the rest, or what?
They want to be in the top 10%. I think it was by the, I can't remember what year. They want to be one of the top 10 states that score high in those college assessments.
So why don't we just require our kids to take the SAT and SAT from the freshman year on?
Well, I know that we're requiring all students that are graduating to take those
qualities. I know we are, but the state's not.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, what they're doing is they're trying to back it up all the way down to third grade. They're looking, and I'm not defending, you know, what it is that they're doing, because I do feel like we have a lot of tests that we're giving our students. But their justification is if we have college readiness standards and we have a college ready component, that students have to perform advanced level in our English 3 and Algebra 2 assessments, mm-hmm. and of course assessments in order to graduate on our DAP. They're backing those readiness standards all the way down to third grade in the math and in the English. So that's their justification for
so why, not make
why
it,
are we testing out the
end? So why not make it part of the end of course? You know, they seem to go from one, let's get rid of this test, and then this is going to be better. But, you know, I see a lot of duplicity, and I still see a lot of, you know.
And one of the things that they're doing also, because they're realizing that every time they want to change the rigor in a test, it has a new name. We went from TABS to TEAMS to TOS to TACS. And, you know, where TABS was basic skills, TEAMS was minimum skills, TACS was knowledge and skills, and now we have readiness skills with the you know, now. So what they're going to do now, instead of changing the whole testing program, which is what they've been doing every time they want to change the rigor, is every 3 years they're now going to revisit the performance standards and keep the same test. That's their goal, because it's costing everybody a lot of money every time.
Maybe we need to add a readiness component to the college graduates, so that if they're going on to graduate school and beyond, that they'll be able to have. I think that's silly. I mean, it's, you know, and it's just our state adding more stuff to, you know, that we have to do, and they're not giving us money to do it, and trying to give her all these assessments. What do you know? And I guess a loaded question. Do you know what they're going to do in terms of our responsibility with respect to the R component in the STAR, the readiness?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Yeah, what are going to be the what are they going to hold us responsible in terms of the performance of our kids on the readiness components? Or is it just an indicator?
Well, it's going to go with those goal performance. Again, in order to get a student to graduate on DAP, they're going to have to hit, they're going to have a score that ranges in the advanced academics. In other words, it's not that different than what it used to be. I mean, you had MET standard, which is now going to be satisfactory, uh-huh. and you had commended, which is now going to be advanced. But what they're doing is they're just raising the bar as far as the question more. The questions are going to be more rigorous. Now, not all of them, they're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's going to be a good portion that were still, I mean, tasks, they didn't have, some of those questions were still challenging. But one of the reasons that I look at our commended scores is because they're getting rid of the low-level questions and adding more of those higher-level questions that our commended students were getting right. So it's shifting the depth and complexity of the questions on the test. So that's why they commended, because those kids were getting it right already on that part of the test. Whereas the meta expectation is, you know, just passing. So that's why I think looking at the commended kind of gives us an idea of the difficulty that we're going to have.
And the common assessments that you put on the table in turn on the page that you added,
The next agenda.
I think that's another.
Yeah. Next item. Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, are we ready to go to the next agenda item?
Thank you.
It's
good report.
I have one more question. I noticed that also in this report too, there's some of the scores in Spanish are kind of low too.
Yes.
Does it have to do with the translation, or?
You know what? The Spanish assessments, you know, going to the meetings with PA, are actually at a higher Alexa level. So our students do struggle more with the reading, because it is harder, more difficult reading. And, you know, that certainly can be one of the complaints, or one of the reasons that they struggle more on the Spanish test, especially in fifth grade, getting, again, harder and harder. The content gets harder, the vocabulary gets harder, everything gets harder. So,
okay,
the test itself is harder than the English test.
Right. So this Renaissance Learning, they already have their own translation? Or do you have to do their own translation?
Renaissance is in English.
So who does the translation?
The teacher would do the translation.
Teacher? Homeroom teachers?
I'm sorry?
Homeroom teacher?
Whoever is giving the intervention, but right now, yeah, accelerated math is not offered in Spanish.
So just to clarify, all this, the STAR Math, Accelerated Math, Math Facts in a Flash, it's all in English. There's no Spanish.
Well, and Math Facts in a Flash is just really doing your multiplication, you know, just getting the math facts in, so that's universal. But the word, and most of it is skills, so most of it is universal,
yeah.
Where it's, you know, mathematics lends itself more when you're dealing mostly with basic skills and facts.
Yeah, but a lot of word problems, no.
Right.
There's two or three level parts to it, and if you don't speak English, it's hard. I mean,
absolutely.
So none of these programs, then there's no Spanish. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, the accelerated math is not in Spanish.
Okay.
And the STAR, the test as well.
Ms. Rachel.
I have a question. I see on your graph where it has the blue, the red, and the green.
Yes.
And what percentile are students use these programs?
Of the 100 that were selected for intervention.
Yes, I see that. Mm-hmm. I see that that at the middle school didn't even use the math facts in a flash.
Right, and that's something that we're going to go out there to support because we just didn't want to dump everything at once. So we want familiarity with one program, and then now that we see that every student has had an opportunity to be tested and has at least one assignment that, you know, they've completed, now the teachers are comfortable with that, then we can take them to the next
one. Yeah, because looking at this, it sort of looks unbalanced, you know.
Right.
Some are under 20% with the math facts.
Yes. And this helps us know where we need to go out and support.
And who determines how they're going to be used? Like, other than that didn't use it at all. Who's the one that's determined?
The campus. The campus is working to implement the intervention. So, you know, we left it up to the middle schools decided to do it during mentoring life because it's already a structured time. And in the beginning of the year, there are a lot of things that happen during that period where you have, you know, the number plates for pay, certain activities going on to start off the school year. So that one, they got a little bit more to start on that one. But, you know, again, we're working to go out and support them. I know we need to do paper and whatever, you know, we need to fill it. Yes.
The reason why, because I can see that
the
CD is also below.
Yeah, it's on Bill Childers and one of the other elementaries is below, under 20%.
Right. And all this has to do with the teachers being comfortable with using the program. There's so much things that are available that they have to get comfortable to be able to navigate, to use it. And that's where PAMS team leaders help, where they come out continuously. And I know we already have scheduled those to come out so the teachers can start using math facts. And then they can implement it to their time. So it's not that we're ignoring it or we're trying to. There's just so much, especially with iStation coming in this year. There was just so much to take in when it comes to computer-based programs. But we're settling. We're kind of navigating ourselves through there.
Okay. At this time, I see some teachers that are here. I don't know if they want to come.
Approach.
Teachers, do you want to come and approach us? See if you have any comments.
Good evening, Lily Maldonado from CES. On the graph that you have, percentage of use student usage, I want to know if the 100% that you have for CES as a startup, yeah, I can see 100% because we have 100 licenses. But for the accelerated math, you're showing 100%. Where did you get that from?
That report comes up when we're looking at, it's in the last 30 days, and if those students have something printed and scored, at least one assignment in the last 30 days.
Because I can't see where it's 100% for CES, because number one, I'm not using it because it's only in English. And number two, I really don't know, I understand, I'm sorry, I don't know.
Ms. Rivera
using it maybe during instructional time because she has less kids than your general ed teacher. I have 18 students. There's no way that I can use it during instructional time in order to comply with the standards that I have to teach for STAR. So as far as during instructional time, during the day, it can't be used. When it's being used, I know at our campus, is after school as a tutoring. And one of the things, the disadvantages of this program is that it's all it is dittos. It's dittos. You print out, you put in the objective of what the student is weak in, and it prints out a ditto, and they work it out. Well, there's no interaction. Tutoring, my tutoring, I do it with manipulatives and hands-on things that if they didn't catch it during the instruction, now it's more one-on-one based. And so, but like I said, I'm not using it because it's in English, and there were problems. So I don't know how the 100% is coming out for CES. Another disadvantage is that once you have the students in there by groups, like I have 7 students in groups, but again, they're not using that. Then if I have a new student that comes in, I can't put her or him in because the license has been used up. We have 100 licenses, that's it. And so I can't put a new student in to take advantage of the program. Again, it's a disadvantage for me because my students are Spanish. I'm bilingual. Even though I do the 50-50, the majority of them are going to be taking the test in Spanish. And so as far as translating, I'm sorry, but there is no time to translate this. Not by a teacher. So that's my point of view.
May I add something to that? When I teach my kids, well, you know, being that they're in special ed, it depends on the teacher. You know, there's no way on earth I'm just going to hand over the dittos to them. I have to break down the information, you know. They also show you step by step how to do it. They get to see it too as well. So if my kid could master within the short time, and he's in special ed, can you imagine what it does for all the regular kids if the teachers do it? But there's no way on earth that a teacher should just say, okay, here's the paper, do it on your own. Of course not. You need to sit down and explain to them and walk it through. You know, you sit there and explain it. For those that can't read, well, then there's accommodations. There's modifications. It's not just handing over a bunch of papers and say, work it out yourself.
And of course, the big issue here is the amount of number of students in a special ed class versus a general ed classroom. Okay. And yes, you are right. It's not just about handing the ditto. It's about working it. And that's why my interventions are done with manipulatives and making the students be able to process what they're doing instead of just working out a ditto and I explain or I read it out loud type thing. There's more interventions when you work hands-on with the students, whether it be through games like a card game, or I have cards where they have to do the match the decimal to place value with graphs, different ways, but it's manipulatives that I use. And again, the biggest disadvantage for me is that it's in English. Mm-hmm. So,
and we use this too also on the weekends. You know, that's when we use a lot with the retargeted, you know, because I tutor on the weekends for 3 hours.
And the intention of the program, and I know Ms. Maldonado was saying she had 18 students, it wasn't to use for a whole class. It was 100 students on a campus that are strategically, you know, pulled aside to give intervention. And I know that one of the weaknesses of the program is that it is not in Spanish. And it's really hard for me to find intervention programs, even iStation, you know, which is a very successful program, is right now they only have the assessments in Spanish. TEA took 2 months later to put out their release in Spanish. I mean, it's a challenge that I feel very bad for, that, you know, it's hard to find products that support the dual language programs. And we continue to look for programs that do that. And so, again, it's just targeted intervention to pull out. And, you know, one of the things we might be able to do is work with Antonio and his department and you know, find some academic tutors that will sit and translate the word problems, when the word problems do come up, you know, to find some solutions to, you know, the things that those students are dealing with, because we realize they already have a challenge by not being able to speak the language. And they're in fifth grade. they have to take the English test in sixth grade. There is no Spanish in sixth grade. And if they've been in the United States for more than 3 years, they can't even get linguistic accommodations for this. So going from Spanish to English with no linguistic accommodations is the start out. If they've been in the U.S. more than 3 years, and that we've got some real challenges there.
Just to put a bug in your ear is that I'm not saying that by fifth grade they should be performing in Spanish. On the contrary, by fifth grade, if they've been in the United States for 5 years, they should be able to do it in English. Unfortunately, the reality is that they're not. Their English is just not coming along. And so maybe we need to do something there as far as early exit or whatever. But by all means, by fifth grade, these students, if they've been in the United States and in our district, they should be able to function in English, especially for a worksheet like this, because it's not multi-steps, and many times it's one problem, and then they figure it out type thing. And so it's not really advanced or STAR. I don't see this as STAR at all. But by fifth grade, they should be able to function, but they don't. That's the reality. So I have to go with the reality. Not what research shows or anything like that, the reality that I'm faced with.
Okay, Ms. McMahon, do you want to say something?
Just about the same thing that Lily has. I've also got some copies here of some of the students' work if you want to see the dittos. Also, questionnaire from teachers at AMS.
I can see maybe using this in the elementary in a small classroom, but not in the limited time that we have, 30 minutes Mentoring Minds time to work with the kids, and you've got three or four different levels. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. I'm constantly, well, I'm not really. I have hardly used it. I've had no ink, no paper. Several other teachers have had no ink, no paper. That's a real hassle. We have no money for ink or paper, we're told. There's one person that has used it consistently. The rest of us have used it here and there. The gal from the program came once and worked with us for 4 hours. Everything was very rapid. She's been back, I think, twice. Once a few weeks ago for maybe an hour to walk through how's it going, this is and that's. And that hasn't been any help either. She also told us, which I found strange, that, oh, no, you don't have to keep doing dittos and dittos. Once they've mastered that objective, then tell them to get a book out and read. And I just found that was very strange for AMI time. I feel that I can do a better job myself in 30 minutes. Power standards, past tax results, spring mock, a various amount of things that I can research for each one of the students. It's also a hassle to get a student exited and a student put admitted because of the contract thing. I don't know how all that works, but it seems, I started, I guess in November, asking for three students to be exited and three others to be admitted, and it just happened in January. So, it's just been constant. I just, there's a lot of us at AMS that just throw their hands up in the air and said, I could do a better job without it. So.
And addressing the exiting and the allowing kids to look in and out, one of the things that Renaissance has helped us do now, if students were tested and found, okay, you really don't need this program, they gave us more licenses. Because we can't remove children from it, we can only input. So they gave us extra licenses on the campuses, which is why, like for example, one campus will have 240 students, but really we're only targeting that 100. But in case there were teachers that went and tested all their students, and they weren't really, that wasn't what it was intended for, they gave us more licenses to use that. So we're looking at out of 100 students, what percent of students are using the program. That's what that bar graph. And we didn't create the bar graph, the Renaissance. This is the Renaissance data that pulled up for us, so.
Okay, any further questions, comments?
Oh, is it okay, ma'am?
Yes.
It's not, when we first heard about this, we did feel like it was kind of like, here, your class is going to do this. So I could see where the teachers were going to be pressured. I felt for the teachers. I felt for the campus. But once we sat back and really understood, because my teachers were overwhelmed. They were. I'm not going to say that they weren't. I even had, I made an announcement, and I talked to the teachers in the library, and I told them, I want everybody to unplug your computer right now. That's how overwhelmed they were. Because they were learning iStation, they were learning accelerated math. So it is tough. It's a tough year. But once you sit back and you really look at the program and you can approach it, you have veteran teachers, you have great teachers, you have new teachers, you have all types of teachers. It's just a matter of how you're going to approach it. Now, I want to be honest with you. If I have a teacher that can do great intervention, they don't want to do accelerated math, I am not going to push them. I'm not going to push them. Because they're great. They make progress with those kids. They know where they're going. But for the most part, the teachers, the students that need this, it really does help them. And you're talking about kids that are functioning four grade levels below. I mean, you're talking about a big, big gap. And yes, my teachers will ask me, do I have to use it during instruction time? No way. In no way do you have to do that. That is your time. That is your time as a teacher to instruct, to use your approach. Now, do we use our academic tutors? Because that's what they came out with. Now, even during PLCs, they're the ones that are coming out with the solutions. It's not the matter of me dictating, this is what you're going to do and this is what's going to happen. But they take more ownership if they come out with their own solution. How are we going to use accelerated math to their benefit? And I'm going to tell you, there's some grade levels that will say, you know what, oh, I want to develop my own intervention. There's some grade levels, believe it or not, that do translate it. It just depends. Not every single time, because that is a lot, but it just depends on the PLC groups that you have and what they want to work with and how they want to move forward. How they're going to use their academic tutors. How are we going to use it during our weekend warriors tutoring sessions? You know, it's just a matter of the approach and how we want to use it. Every school's different. Every school has different needs. You know, but for our school our school that's 460 students, it does benefit. We're not going to have, at this point, we don't have 100% use. We don't. But, I mean, in comparison to, I guess, kind of to you that have 800 or, you know, I mean, those are a lot of kids. But when you're talking about a small school, this is a great resource and a great intervention to help our kids right now. I'm not sure. We're still working at it. It's still brand new. But if we're not consistent or at least trying to use it throughout the year, tweaking it to make it yours, then it's hard to really make a judgment call of saying it's not going to work out. Yeah, you're right. It's only in English. I agree with that. That's tough. But at this point, I can't say I like it or I hate it because they're still working on it. It's still something that's in the process of learning and how to use it. Now, once we complete the year or complete maybe another year, then we can say, you know what? It's not helping at all. It's not helping because these kids need to get the basics in.
And I like to add something else, too. You know, it's about the kids. And I can tell you that the kids like using it. When you see kids with a smile on their face because they feel a sense of accomplishment, because they have mastered objectives that wasn't clear to them, it's building those basic foundations on up, then that makes me happy.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
The thing I'm hearing over and over and over again is not enough ink, not enough paper.
Right. And I know that we have orders right now for AMS and JDE. We're just waiting for it to come in, too. And just know ahead of time now about how much they're going to need so that we can make sure that they don't come across that stumbling block. And again, it's a learning year. It sounds great, you know, when you want to implement it, but then as you start implementing it, you start realizing, okay, these are the challenges that we're facing, now how do we overcome them? And by all means, I'm not ready to give up on this because I'm seeing some great progress at some of the campuses.
As far as the paper is concerned, I have a standing
yes
agreement with any principal that's short on paper, they can just come to me. So if AMS is short paper, we can have paper delivered to them tomorrow. And Pam, you need to look into that first thing in the morning. That's not a problem. We can handle the paper. Now the ink, you know, the certain cartridges and all that, but paper we can do.
No, it's personal.
And I have not had any outcry or even request for paper from anybody, but I'll be happy to work on that tomorrow.
Also, are you going to work with someone on the translation then? Or?
Well, it's so individualized, you know, per student as we move it through, to have everything translated ahead of time is not feasible. That because, like, the lessons, you know, they master one, then a new one comes out, they master it, and it's accelerated. You know, since you've been using it in September, the student has already accelerated in the year. I think one of the things that we can do, I can work with the ALS department to see if there's some type of help that we can provide for that. That is a challenge, and yes. I'm sitting here right now, I don't have the solution for it. I have to keep
going. And I understand Ms. Rivera, she doesn't have that many students compared to a regular classroom setting. Right.
And
so,
and again, it's meant to be either a pull-out or a little tutoring sessions. It's not meant to be used for the class-wide because you have too broad a range of too many students. So it's meant to be, that's why it's 100 students per campus, K-5. That you're going to pull little intervention groups where you can see a student working. And those are that's where we have to get to. How are we going to structure those types of interventions on a campus? And then maybe we need to get bilingual academic tutors, because I know that you have academic tutors, and we also have academic tutors at DDE, Marta. Was just telling me this morning that her academic tutors are raving about it. So one of the things I have to do, and I didn't ask her about the Spanish component this morning, but they were really liking it, and I can see if that's what they're doing, but then that's who we have to hire, is people that can sit next to a student and work with that and help them translate that. Because we don't want to ignore those gaps either, but we do have a challenge finding programs that offer that. And I will fully admit that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mrs. Moynihan, but doesn't the academic tutor basically, during the day, you know, when they're at kids, don't they work with like 500 students, no more than that? So it's basically targeted for us.
And one of the ways that we've addressed it is that, you know, the math is supposed to be 50-50, right? And so this would be the 50% part of the English, that's how we work with iStation too. Since math is 50-50 and we really need to move into English, you know, to support the fifth grade, that they don't come not knowing of English in the sixth grade, there's no other alternative other than to take it in English. And again, they don't make it any easier for a student that's taking Start L other than they offer them a bilingual dictionary and then some assistance that way, but it's still the same test. So that could be considered as part of their 50% of the English. Could be on that part because math and science are 50-50. But again, it's nice if a student is struggling and stumbling upon a word that you have someone there to be able to support and help them through for that intervention.
Okay.
Maybe we could hear again from y'all.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
yeah,
how
we'll keep
blossoming. Before it comes up for renewal with a price tag on it.
Yes, and that's another great thing. The renewal for Star Math would only be 99 cents per student, which is 100 per campus. Mm-hmm. Math, Bats, and Flash, same thing, 99, so that would be only $100 per renewal for the campus. So in total, when we originally spent $69,000 on all seven campuses, the renewal for them in October would be $8,000 or $9,000 for all of the programs. So, but again, we want a positive initiative. We really are working hard to support the teachers with that. But renewal will be minimal.
Okay. We want to keep those teachers happy.
Yes, we're really working hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see the challenges that are just... I mean, in a perfect world, we'd have an academic tutor for each class to work on the Spanish component for those classes like the bilingual ed that they should do it. And, of course, I don't think we have those kind of resources for every single, right?
Right. It's kind of, you know,
we're working on Elbow, we're working with the campuses, and spending our money toward more being proactive instead of reactive and having to remediate students. Let's get them getting it and closing those gaps during the instruction day, during the year, unless it's summer school or,
after school. Thank you for your time.
I have to say, too, just this redid as one student did that incredible acceleration. I mean, that was phenomenal.
You'll get a grade level by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's really incredible. Thank you.
Tony, next agenda item, please.
Item D is update on common assessments.
With our first year of, me being here in the district, when we, that first summer that we worked on curriculum, where we really brought that curriculum team around the table to study the curriculum, make it their own, so to speak, rearrange things if they needed to. The first year we didn't get to any common assessments at all. So if you look at the table below, it's kind of the grade level. English and Spanish, the percentage based on the number of units that we have, how many units have common assessments attached to them. And I'm talking district common assessments that we were able to do at a district level to create through the study of the curriculum. So we've made some progress, but we're by all means, we're not there yet. Some of the benefits that we have of creating common assessments is, when we look at PLCs and how PLCs operate, one of the main tools that a PLC has is data, to look at data. And especially data where you have all teachers on a campus and at a district level to be giving the same assessment so that you can really see district-wide how we're progressing so there are no surprises at the end. So, through the creation of common assessment, we really study the C-scope, which includes our standards, the TEKS. We also look at the test. Now, we still look at our KILGO, which was TAPS, our higher level questions, and our new released items that the state has given us to show us what their intent is when they say readiness. We have readiness standards, we have supporting standards, we have a new blueprint. When there was tax, all the TEKS were created equal. So they had a blueprint of, this many questions will be for this standard or for this objective. Now they've narrowed it down, these are readiness standards and we're gonna have this many questions for this one and this percentage is gonna be readiness and supporting. 65% of the test is gonna be readiness standards, so that gives us more of a target. It's that college readiness strand that's leading to English 3 and Algebra 2. 35% are going to be supporting, but only 30% of the TEKS are readiness standards. So 30% of, here's our curriculum, 30% of our TEKS are 65% of the tests. So that's how the state is really making us focus on what they deem as college readiness standards. And so the supporting standards is 70% of the TEKS, but only 35% of the tests. So these standards are going to be rotating in and out of the test each year, where our readiness will be 2 or 3 questions probably per readiness standard. So just getting the teachers to understand the blueprint and the difference, I think was great staff development for them, because they have to live, it's like project-based learning, as we created the mocks and we created the common assessments. And again, it's so that they can begin with the end in mind as they sit around the PLC and then have campuses, to be able to compare how teachers are doing with each other. So if the teacher did well on one student expectation, then they can get help from that teacher. All teachers have their strengths. So focus on the strengths with the teachers and be able to help each other through that. They also learned how to use Eduphoria. Eduphoria is another investment that the district has made, another program. And until it reaches the teachers, it's great. We can sit up here and I can analyze the data, but if the teachers aren't understanding how to use the program and able to use it, then it's really not getting to the level where it's going to drill down to the students. So we've used the curriculum and creating the common assessments and creating the mock to
staff develop teachers on the program as well. And so I think we had some successes with that, definitely. And then also, one of our tier one goals is to include teachers in the decisions regarding the use of assessments in the district. I don't want to, Ms. Moda was saying, it's when you let the teachers own things and have ownership with them and develop them that they are going to make it their own and going to make it successful. So, again, one of the biggest challenges has been transaptation of the English for the elementary. Again, we do have a Spanish test for a certain percentage of students at the elementary level. So, one of the things that we're hoping to do this year is maybe, because if you think about the elementary teachers, they have math, science, social studies, and English TEKS. That's a lot of student expectations for one teacher that are responsible for. In the fifth grade, you have science, reading, and math tests. That's a lot, you know, when you look at pressure on a teacher. So, whereas when we look at our secondary, if you look at the common assessments in secondary, do you see how the percentage is greater? We have the number of common assessments that are available for the units. It's because a math teacher in middle school and high school, they only teach math. So our teams are already created. We know that they're the experts in that subject area. With elementary, we have all these different, so we need more teachers. So when we had summer school and curriculum writing together, it really tapped on both. It impacted summer school, it made, you know, that difficult, and it made getting the number of human resources we need for you know, to really support the elementary teachers in the curriculum. Because they were doing a lot. They were doing two subjects and then trying to translate everything. One of the things, so that is one of the ways I'm hoping that maybe we can work with that. The other one is I found a program called Star One that already has the region stamp of approval. I was talking to Stephanie Zelenak the other day. She said it's a one-year program. The questions are to the rigor. You click a button and you pick a question and it automatically transadapts it. It's there. So I think I found a solution that's going to really help us with the common assessment issue. And you know, one of the reasons that we don't do it here centrally, for one, it's K-12 that's a huge number of assessments for one person. But also, if we're looking at a student expectation, if you have a student expectation, for example, that says the student is expected to use multiplication or division involving fractions and or decimals, that question could be just multiplication of fractions, not division of decimals, but all those questions that hit those will fall under that. So if we just go and we just click, oh, it's that student SC, that might not have been what that teacher was teaching for that 3 weeks, when maybe we picked a division of decimals, when it was a multiplication of fractions and tenth of that, because the SCs are pretty wide. So that's why we need the curriculum writers and the teachers to study the curriculum and create that student assessment, because they understand the intent and the pacing of whatever that's going to fall into. And it also, it's studying, you know, the rigor and making sure that the intent is there, beginning with the teachers. So, the team and I did see the program, the Star One program. It looks really good. Antonio Del Campo saw it. Looks good. Again, the region it's in their co-op. So, and they're looking right now into reducing the price for smaller districts. So that's what I'm waiting for, is to see. Okay, they're supposed to work on that this week. Because they were doing it per campus, but kind of as a general, well, if we're smaller, you know, and we have fewer students, we shouldn't have to pay as much as another district is their thinking, so they're helping us with that. Next step, again, we're working with Region 19 to identify the resources that will expedite the adoption process, because we know that's been a challenge. And again, to create more core teams in the summer for the elementary level, to where we can populate the common assessments as much as we were able to with the secondary.
Mr. Corona.
Pam, what you're telling us is that the same thing's happening with the, I guess, your readiness component, that they're not basically telling us how these things are expect to be seen on the actual test itself, which is why how C-Scope developed, really, because the state really didn't tell us, they didn't align their TEKS to the TACS, right?
And they're, well, and they so, did a little bit more, but they're saying they're doing it even more so now with STAR. It was better than TOS. TOS was very misaligned. TACS was more aligned, but now they're saying STAR is very
should
aligned.
Be better aligned? So we should be able to have a better grasp on it off the chute, so to speak?
Right, but it's harder.
I know
it's
a different issue, but it's
yes.
And you know, I don't mind if it's harder. It's trying to guess how they're going to test it when they don't themselves aren't doing it, and we have to get a consortium of all these regions to collaborate just to see what the state is trying to do. I don't want to go through that again because that's going to, But
they've just given us a snippet of they've given us like 9 to 12 questions of. At each grade level.
And that's what I was asking. How much have they given us in terms of the expectations on how these test
questions
on the
questions
on the readiness are going to look like? About that much?
About 12 questions. Not for much. The readiness and supporting.
Yeah?
Just snippets. Yeah, a little snapshot.
Not a whole lot. Though. So this is all going to be a mystery other than these little.
And we know that we can look at the killed or the released items from TACS, the levels 2, 3, and 4, the higher level questions. They're not throwing all those out. But they are adding more of the process skills. Before, in math and in science, the process skills were its own objective. Now they're calling reporting categories. They got, for example, math had 6 objectives. The last one was problem solving and process skills. They got rid of it. And now are embedding problems in all of these. So that's one way they're increasing the rigor, is they're putting more process questions in the other 5 objectives. Because it's really hard to isolate problem solving without hitting all the other different objectives.
Right. And were you all able to develop some common assessments on the readiness standards that you feel are?
Yes, one of the things that we've done with the IFDs is identified the power standards and which ones are readiness and which ones are supporting. So when they're studying that, they know what's coming up, what's a readiness standard, what's a supporting standard. When we develop the common assessments, the answer documents in EDU4, we identify which student expectation it is. So when they run the data, they can see how they're doing on the readiness and the supporting standards. One of the areas that we need to get better is just following through with scanning the answer documents so that the data is there on EDU4 so that we can analyze it. We're okay with giving the assessments, but we have to really follow through with scanning.
Well, I can see we're at least a little better ahead of the curve than we were to prepare for the TACS.
Yes,
from the staff.
Because a lot of teachers have received staff development regarding the blueprints.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
I'm very proud of the Connoisseur teachers, I have to tell you. I'm extremely proud of them. I think we involve them a lot in the process, and I think they're learning a lot from it. And they're doing a great job.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, I have another one. I'm sorry. So this one, the problem again is translation, and it's going to be the same solution, finding someone to translate, or?
Well, we should know by this week I think if we can get that other resource that automatically transadapts a question, because either way it's going to take resources. It's going to take somebody to translate, and when you have 50 or when you have 30 different PLCs and having to translate, the tests, it's a challenge. But I know it's something that we have to work on, and I've already, like I said, looked at the STAR one, and I think if we can get that here soon, then that's something that the PLC will be able to do.
What we've done right now is, and the elementary is still finishing giving their mocks, but what we're doing is we're creating data heat maps for the campuses for each PLC. We've already done it with the high school. We're working with the middle schools tomorrow to give, running the data for each PLC, how did on the mock, how did you do on your readiness standards, how did you do on your supporting standards? And, you know, and I'm asking the campuses to work with their PLCs to create a day-by-day plan. You have the mock data, you have this many days till your star. We might have to forego the curriculum now. We've made it till February this year. We might have to forego the curriculum to now focus on what is your campus strengths and weaknesses.
Who's going to break them, the mock assessments?
It just runs in the stand-up instructional coordinators and the APs are...
And how about the compositions, language arts, when they have to write?
The teachers are grading those. We had Nancy Love training here today, and she worked with all of the fourth grade teachers and taught them the new STAR rubric, because that the latest just came out last month. So we were going to have it earlier. We didn't have the writing in the fall because the rubric wasn't out yet. And we didn't want to unteach something based on what we didn't know yet. So the final rubric came out last month. So we had the training. We had the mock writing last week. So we pulled in the fourth grade teachers today with Nancy Love. She taught them how to use the rubric, and they worked on grading their essays today here in the boardroom. So we did a staff development around that and what the new expectation was for the STAR and for the writing. So again, it was relevant to them because it was their students' essays. And so now they learned the rubric and they started grading them today. And we're gonna do the same thing on the 16th for the seventh grade teachers, but we're gonna pull in all sixth, seventh, and eighth grade writing teachers so that in sixth grade they can already start using the rubric, so it's not all on the seventh grade teachers. So they can just keep practicing that. So that's, they are having to grade the writing. So they can see where their students are. We've got 4 weeks between here and there. What intervention, what is it that we need to help our students with? So it's very targeted.
Ms. Fierro, I don't know if mine's more of a comment or, but what I've been hearing is that a lot of teachers are feeling that because of the common assessments and because there's so many mistakes on them, that it's losing the validity of it with the students. They're catching the mistakes. It's completely, like, I don't know who checked them before they went out, but to me it seems we should have an adult checking these before we take them out to kids. I mean, it big mistakes, not small ones, big ones, and the kids were catching them. And as a student, when you're taking a test and you're telling them it's important, but it's wrong, it's kind of, it loses its meaning. They don't, I think we're going to lose the kids at some point on that. So to me, it's a concern. I did have several teachers call me, and they were frustrated, and their kids were frustrated, and I want to know, what are we doing to fix that? I mean, I know I talked to you earlier and I told you they were long. You told me they had been shortened since then. But when I have a child that came home and, mom, my test this and my test that, and it was wrong and it didn't make sense, and I have to retake it. My teacher said it's not worth anything. I mean, that to a student, that's too much. I mean, so those are some of the concerns I have. I know it's been hard for the teachers. I know we talked already, you know, you said it is going to be difficult. We're on a learning curve. We're not getting much information from the state. We're trying our best. But I just, is it at some point becoming excessive? And then the information that we are giving the kids, it's not accurate. It's wrong. I mean, that's not good.
Well, one of the things I think that I have to look at into that is, where did the questions come from and how were they created? Because if it's coming from C-Scope, you know, I just came from administrators' meetings, and, you know, they did send out a letter, you know, apologizing for mistakes, that it's a work in progress. So if it's a C-Scope assessment, you know, they're aware of it and they're working on correcting those as well. If it's an eduphoria, then, you know, that's something too. Like if it's a question from eduphoria, again, that's something I need to know. Because, you know, sometimes we put it out there and I don't always get the feedback. You may get the feedback, but mm-hmm. I need to get the feedback so that I can fix it. So mm-hmm. I can answer that better if I know more of the specifics of it. Okay. But certainly, whatever it is, I think, you know, we're just going to have to do a better job that when we create it, that we print it and we take it, you know, and that we make sure that,
well, you know, like
if there's an error, we catch it, we remove it before it goes out, so.
I mean, I don't know, like, one example question I can give you, and I don't know if the test does have, or the common assessments do have trick questions or what, but I know one of them was a question along the lines of, what type of narrative is this? And at the top of the paper, it said, this is a personal narrative. So those kind, I mean, are they trick questions? Are they seeing if the kid's actually reading them? To me, it seems kind of funny, like,
yeah.
It says right there what it is. I mean, it just, that was one of the questions my daughter, she's fourth grade writing, and I'm asking you because she, you know, was confused, and that's sure. just one child. I don't know about everybody else, and that's just because I have one. But I tell you, the teachers were really, like, their kids were coming to them, and it's wrong. It doesn't make sense. It's run-on sentences. The grammar's off. Like, that's a big deal when you're giving the kids and telling them, hey, let's take this serious,
right.
And it's not. You know what I mean?
Are you talking about a common assessment or talking about the mock?
Well, that's my question. I think I'm talking more about the mock,
okay.
too, as well. But, I mean, I heard that common assessments as well were
okay.
not. So I wanted to bring that to your attention.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Lauren.
So no one edits these tests?
Well, yes, the intention is that they are proofread and edited. So that's just, again, if I know exactly where it's coming from, I can address it from my end.
But it should be being edited.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I was going to say the same thing, but I'm glad she said it. I mean, my son is in the seventh grade, and he came home with the same thing. The teacher was reading, I guess, starting to read the paper, and he said, these are the instructions, but the instructions were wrong anyway. So I think it happened throughout the district, whether it was eduphoria, whether it was whatever program I don't know what programs they were using. So, I mean, we have some staff members here that I don't know if they want to come up and share some of their experiences.
I do. Lily Maldonado. You know, we've been directed to administer common assessments and mock tests to teach the same thing at the same time to create assessments. Ms. Piotr just mentioned about the benefits of the common assessments, where you have your PLC, your teachers that look at the document and then kind of plan their instruction. And to see, the main thing that I see with the common assessments, the benefit, is that it's aligned not only all fifth grade at every single campus, but it's aligned so that if a student leaves my CES campus and goes to another one, they are basically going to start off where they left off. Whereas before, we weren't teaching the same thing. So that's one of the benefits, and that goes with our year at an end glance from the CSCO. Okay, so the problem is, yes, and I'm going to take you back to some issues. When the master teachers were hired, Ms. Piero offered at that time to make copies of the common assessments for the teachers as a support, okay? And it was being done the first semester. I was on the curriculum writing team in the summer, and we worked on the assessments for the whole first semester in both English and Spanish. And we did use eduphoria, and many of those eduphoria items, they're actually CSCO questions. And then we translated. One teacher was here, we were reading it in English, she was better in Spanish, she'd translate, we'd edit. And all of those were up and available for teachers to click and have that assessment. And then we would let the curriculum department know how many we needed in English, how many we needed in Spanish. And we were being delivered those common assessments. However, in the second semester, what we're finding is that they're minimal common assessments for the units that we're teaching, because we've gotten into the habit of pulling out the assessments so that we can start our planning. What are we going to plan based on this, and of course based on the standards? And we'll come to find out that we have the fourth 6 weeks and part of the fifth 6 weeks common assessments only. There are none for the remainder of the year. And those assessments are only in English. And so in order to keep with the mandate of having the student that is being taught in both languages to take the same assessment in both languages, English and Spanish, then we decided as a PLC to go ahead and use the C-Scope assessment, because C-Scope has assessments as well. Then the district has the teacher district-created assessments, which is what we were using all the first semester. So the problem is there are none in Spanish. So we decided, okay, we'll use the C-Scope assessment. It's in English and Spanish. It's identical. And so we called the curriculum department and asked for copies, and we're told no, because they're not district-created. They're C-Scope. And I'm like, well, but some of the common assessments questions are from C-Scope. Okay. And so then we explained, you know, that you don't have them in Spanish. Well, you need to translate them yourselves. Come on. Translate them ourselves? Okay. The point is, where's the support? Master teachers were supposed to be hired to support teachers. You know, I heard the Bill Childress principal say that continuously they're at her campus. Well, I guess that's why they're not at ours, because maybe they're at Bill Childress. Because we've only had the math teacher there twice, the master lead teacher twice, and that was to train us on accelerated math. And then, like Ms. McMahon said, a couple of weeks ago, went back to see how we were doing. That's it. We haven't seen science. We haven't seen nothing else. So we bring it up to DAC, this issue, and we are told that the master teachers are not clerical personnel. God forbid that they should be making copies. And that the reason there are no district created assessments is because there was not enough teachers to help in creating them for the second semester. So, sounds like it's all the teacher's fault. You have teachers that have been pulled during instructional time and have given up their Saturdays and, yes, have been paid this semester to create the mock tests. Not the common assessments, but the mock tests. And so they go, they show up, and they're expected to stay till they're finished. And on a Saturday, you know, teachers don't want to stay there till past four. So ultimately, they're going to be rushed in finishing the job. And it's probably going to result in errors, which is what has happened. It's resulted in errors. And then you have a third grade team that has created the mock test for third grade, and have pulled the items, the questions from Eduphoria and the new program, ETT, or I'm not sure if that's
ETS.
And then later they're told, you didn't do a good job. Those were not star rated type questions. We have to do it again. All right, so you see the frustration building up in the teachers, all right? And so maybe you don't have enough teacher support because, number one, they don't feel they should be pulled out during instructional time, especially in the second semester. You know, it starts like 6 weeks away, and you're pulling left and right, left and right, left and right. The first goal of a teacher is to teach, prepare these kids for STAR and for the real world. But you're having them pulled out in what my opinion right now is should be done by someone like the master teachers. That's why you hired them, to support teachers. Then if they show up, they're being told your job is not good enough. You know, there's a problem. There's a problem, major problem. The assessments cannot be done in one day. The mock tests cannot be done in one day. As a curriculum writer, we work for what, over 2 weeks? to create for the whole first semester. Okay, but we have teams. And like Ms. Fiodo said, you have teams that they have two subject areas. And so the problem is that you're having, you know, Ms. Fiodo just mentioned the tier one goal is to have teacher input. I can understand that. Yes, teacher input, because we know what we're teaching, and you pull in a standard, and it might not be exactly the way that we're teaching it or whatever. But yet, when we voice our concern, we're not being heard. So how does that meet the goal of tier one? You know, to have teacher creating the assessments. We're pointing out concerns right now, and we're being told, you know, translate them yourselves or whatever. Now, we're told that, okay, if there's no common assessments in so many words, you know, you can pick C-spoke if you choose as a PLC. Well, that's defeating the purpose of the benefits. We want everybody to be using the same tests. So if you have some groups doing a C-spoke assessment because it's in English and Spanish, and you have another campus where they're doing the district common assessments, how is there alignment? There is none. It's defeating that purpose. Like Ms. Piero said, you know, it's a huge, a tedious job for one person to create all these common assessments and the mock tests. But she said at the secondary, which is 6 through 12, you have teams of teachers that can do just that because they're only teaching one subject. So it's a little bit easier for them than an elementary teacher. So in my opinion, then you can have the master teachers just take care of second through fifth, because we're not testing first grade, we're not testing kinder. It's second through fifth. Create those assessments. The problem too is with when you're having them, the teachers go in and prepare them and they're hurrying, when if there's problems. Now, yes, it should have been edited, it should have been proofread before the copies were made or before the answers were inputted into EduFOIA. It should have been proofread. And who does that? The curriculum department. So it should have been proofread before all those copies were made and all those copies went out to the campuses. And I'll just give you an idea, Pama, of the fifth grade science mock test that we just took on Thursday. My students are taking it in Spanish. Well, you have a mixture of English and Spanish in the question. Un place donde se pone agua a hervir. Un place, okay? And then there's another one where it's a whole question talking about food chain, and the response, the last one, is completely in English. And that's how I found out, because the kid raises his hand and says, Miss, no entiendo, ¿qué dice? I don't understand this. So as the more I keep going, I'm like, oh my gosh. And this is the problem. They use Google to translate. And when they used Google, they didn't recognize not all the words, and so it left those English words, because it was an abundance number of errors where it was the English mixed in with the Spanish. And so now, we're using the mock tests for data, valid data. And I agree with Ms. Casares, how valid now is that data when there's so many errors? Okay. Another issue is that teachers are speaking up, but they're not being heard. At DAC, I'm sorry, Dr. Murphy, if I'm boring you, but I think this needs to be heard. And I know you've already heard.
Is there a point of order as far as minutes available?
This is a committee meeting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. And so at DAC, teachers are coming up from the high school talking about the mock test and how much time, instructional time, this has taken away from them and how it's lowered their attendance. And they're saying maybe just one mock test a year instead of two. And she even went on to say, they took the mock test 2 weeks ago. DAC was last Wednesday. You still have ELA, language arts teachers, grading those essays, because there was three on one mock test. Three essays, 200 kids for a language arts teacher, grading times three. Okay, she says they're still at this point grading. And so there are a lot of issues that have come up at DAC, and we're basically told, quit complaining. Quit complaining. So what do we do? What do we do? We're doing what you ask us. We're asking for support. We're being denied. And the bottom line is that I think that it's about accountability. The accountability is there for teachers. It's high. We're expected to do everything within a day, and even more so because teachers stay late. The workload is huge. The salary for teachers is low. The morale for teachers is low. So I think that it's time for this district to turn it around and start putting the accountability here at central office with your directors and your administrators. You know, because bottom line, you're going to lose teachers. And at the last DAC meeting that you weren't there, Dr. Murphy, goal setting, you know, we're putting little stars on what we feel are important, which is teacher salaries, and somebody from finance says, oh, why are you doing that? And we explain, because we don't want to lose teachers that are dedicated and loyal to this district that have been here for years. And the response is, there's a pool of teachers. And maybe some of you feel that way. So be it. So be it, if that's how you feel. I don't say anything because it's arrogance. They don't know about loyalty. But there is a problem, Pam. There is a problem. And my suggestion is, if we're going to continue doing these common assessments for the remainder of this year, that we either have somebody translate, and not teachers, the common assessments that are there, or that we use the C-scope assessments as common assessments. They're there for every unit. They're there in English and Spanish. Come summertime, you put together a curriculum team like you did last year, and you extend the amount of time so that those curriculum writers can do the assessments for the whole year, not just for the first semester. Not just for the first semester. And right now, it's touch and go. We don't know what the start's going to look like. So it's a guessing game. The mock test that we're creating, we're guessing. We've been told the rigor, we've been shown the blueprints, and we're guessing. The common assessment's the same thing. So to have so many assessments right now and pull us from actually teaching the kids the standards, you know, in my opinion, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. So, that's the issue. You know, and there might be a day when I leave as a teacher in this district, but I guarantee you I will never leave as a taxpayer or as a resident, and who knows, maybe one day I'll be sitting on that board. Thank you.
Thank you, Lily. Any comments or concerns or questions? Or
I have the obvious, the editing, and I mean, I'm a stickler for it. We've got another teacher, maybe, or comment.
Good evening. My name is Sandra Kratz. I teach at Canyon Teal Elementary School, fifth grade. And my issue really is with the Edufolia and scanning the answer documents. It is a good source of providing data, but up to a certain point. Because we talked about this at PLC, we talked about our mock results for the science test, and we were very discouraged because it was like, oh, you know, our kids didn't do very well, and you know, we look at this data and there's questions that most of them are missing, and there's more to why a student might miss an answer to a question besides, oh, they don't know the material. I personally like to get the test booklets and grade them myself, because we as teachers, we always encourage our kids, use your highlighters, show your work, you know, so we can see your thinking process. Edufolia doesn't show us that. That's only information that we can get when we get the test booklets back, and then we can analyze it. Because I've had kids skip questions, they get off on the bubbling, they circle the right answer on the test, they bubble it wrong on the answer document. You know, there's lots of reasons why a student misses questions. That, you know, Edufolia doesn't show. You know, you could have some questions that a bunch of the kids missed, and then you go back and you find, yeah, there was an error here. I can see why the kids missed it. There was a question on that science test that was over my head. I'm like, whoa, you know, I don't know how the kids got that answer. And even when we went over it in class, it was like, how did you guys get this answer? I guessed, you know, I don't know. And I had to tell the kids, I don't blame you, because this is over my head too. So that's my issue. And I don't want this data being used to make broad generalizations about what may or may not be going on in classrooms, because we're with our kids every day. Central office is not with our kids every day. We are. And good teachers, we're always evaluating. We're always assessing on a daily basis through our lessons, through our informal observations. You know, there's so much more to just one snapshot of a common assessment or a mock test. There's so much more to that.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, ma'am.
You know, Ms. Cripps, I agree. The mock is a snapshot, and we know it's not perfect. That, you know, TEA takes theirs through five different reviews. You know, and yes, you know, I do acknowledge that we're mistakes, and we are, you know, we'll get better the more and more we know where those questions are coming from and where in the process. And again, also making sure that we have enough eyes that see the mistakes, because sometimes after you've been in it and you've lived it, you don't even see the mistakes anymore. So just doing a better job of that, you know, I'm certainly aware of that, that we need to do better with that. As far as the eduphoria and the analyzing, again, the mock is a snapshot, and it's no way intended to as an I gotcha. It's to give the PLCs the data to see where are we, and if there's a question, yeah, there was an error, then, you know, we don't pay much attention to that question. We move on to what the data that is there that is going to provide us some information. And, you know, as far as bubbling, you know, we kind of want them to practice now with that, especially our third graders. This is the first year that our third graders have an answer document that they have to bubble. Before, they just would bubble the booklet. So we need to make sure that they're coordinated enough and that they've had some practice and they're building stamina to be able to transfer from a booklet to, you know. So there's practice in many different ways that the mock has given us. And do we give a break for lunch? Do we not? So the mock is really, I think for administrators too, a big help on how much time is it taking? Do we want a break for lunch? Do we not want a break for lunch? How many snack breaks do we want to give? That type of thing. But also for exactly what you are doing, you're right on, because you are looking at the data and you're saying, okay, this is good data. Okay, this question was too hard, or, you know, maybe it wasn't. We're not sure. Like you said, we're still. But is it something that fell with our student expectations that they might be expected to know? Is it reaching for those higher achieving students that we want to see if there's progress happening there? And I commend you for going back and looking at the booklet to see, okay, if they're missing this question, you know, how are they working the problem? So it's not to take away from that at all, but it's to allow you to create a report that says, okay, in this student expectation, the majority of our kids are doing well, they're not doing well, do we spend more time on it, do we not spend more time on it? And it's a snapshot because, again, the supporting standards are 70% of the TEKS, but only 35% of tests, so we couldn't get them all in the mock. It's not the end-all be-all, and we're not in any way saying that it is, but it's a snapshot to kind of give an idea of how students are doing so that we're not surprised at the end of the year. To give data from here on out, what do we need to hit? Has it been taught? Has it not been taught yet? Because there are some issues that haven't been taught yet, but again, it's a universal screener. We had one in the fall, we have one in the spring, and we're hoping that our next one, you know, when START comes at, you know, we're showing growth in that. So, you know, I do acknowledge that there are some areas that we can improve, and we can certainly work on that. But again, it's not an I gotcha for campuses, it's a tool for PLCs to use to analyze data and improve instruction.
Ms. Lauren?
Uh-huh. I ask that BQ Local be handed out to each of us and have some highlighted areas on there. And with that says, I think that brings back to what everybody's been talking about, evaluation of programs. And it's very much our policy that these programs, that the data gathered and the criteria developed, undertake the required biennial evaluation to assure their structure to impact student development. And an annual report shall be made to the board on the results of the use of the program in the district. So I think we need to remember our policy and adhere to these policies. And in so doing, this policy also goes on very specifically about our DAC and our CICs, that we are doing our business as we should be doing it, and that the outcome is productive. and always about, and I know you know this, I'm reading to the choir, about student performance, but that everybody's there because the program's a good program. Not just, oh, I keep using it, you know, we'll make it look a little better, but that we need to actively follow our policy. And Dr. Murphy, that, you know, this will happen, that annually we need a report on the results of the use of these programs in our district and a biennial evaluation to ensure that, you know, they're backed up and they're doing good, and that our professional learning committees or communities are behind them.
And, you know, data is nothing until it's socialized. It means meaningless until it comes to the PLC and we're talking about it. And then, again, if it's, you know, if it's a question that there's an error that was going to impact, you know, this student success on that, then we can make that a zero and it doesn't count as, you know, for or against the student. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we get that feedback, that's, you know, we can do that to a question and engine four, you hit a rescore button and it rescores it all, and, you know, nobody has to do any additional work to that. So, but again, it is those discussions that happen from PLC and decisions that are made from here till the test as to what are our strengths and weaknesses and how are we going to have that impact the curriculum from here on out.
I would feel that before budget time that we should see an annual report on the program so that as a board we can know what to fund for the next year.
Okay, well, that's coming up here in the next 60 days. So you want something else on accelerated math?
Well, I think there's been plenty on accelerated
math. That's what I'm saying. So at the board's discretion, I'll do what you desire. Maybe you could communicate with me. We can talk about how you want that structure.
I suspect this committee can do that after all they've heard, but really this ought to guide what we do with administration, you know, looking at the specifics of evaluation and the criterion for program selection and design. Mm-hmm. That we're right there doing what our policy says.
Do we have anything in place right now that maybe teachers do some kind of evaluation where you can get feedback on it? Like for this accelerated math and other stuff, do you have anything that teachers are, I mean, I know I saw Ms. McMahon gave us this questionnaire, but is there anything that you're seeing that they're giving you input so you know?
Well, I met with the principals today and talked to them about how things were going. And from all the elementaries and the middle schools, they're liking the program. It's the implementation and the structures that they're having to work through. So it's positive. Also sent out a questionnaire on, you know, usage and challenges and benefits, and so I'm still getting some of those back. So just keeping monitoring that.
Through the chair. We're about to do a large staff survey, getting that all ready. I certainly can add some questions about this. I have some general questions already, but nothing real specific, but I can add some of those questions to it.
Yeah, but this pertains to the programs. I don't know if we can come up with something different. Like, for example, maybe you need to look at this, take a look at this, and then go from there, or maybe come up with something else along the lines here. This,
some of the questions.
I haven't seen that.
And I'm going to leave it here so you can see it. Because I had shared this with you about the common assessments, and I'm going to bring this up about the surrounding district. They're also complaining about the common assessments, that it's taking too much time, and they're complaining. And it's a big district. I mean, it's too much. And I'm getting the same thing here. And you just started.
Well, we have to be really careful. You know, going to a new test, going to the STAR, one of the problems is we're kind of shooting in the dark because we don't have all the information on the STAR yet. But this whole process that we've done, and I shared this in DAC, Lily was there, this whole process is a curve. Writing the curriculum. When I first got here, all we had was C-scope and a cellophane wrapper, and everybody was upset about it. And now we've spent two summers pulling it apart, throwing away the stuff we don't like, adding stuff that we want. We've added the tier two intervention products. We've written mocks. We
We're doing the common census, and we're not done. I've never said it's less than a three-year effort. They're going to need to come back this summer, that group, those that want to, and we pay them to do it, to continue writing, to beef up our percentages on numbers of common assessments we have to better our accuracy. And, some of the comments tonight have been just like, let's just scrap all this. Or at least that's how they come across to me. To me, it's just in the mix. And we've done 2 years of real positive work. Our scores are up. We're recognized for the first time in 10 years in our school district. And we need to just continue and not give up. Yeah, there's errors, there's problems all over the place. I just really feel we need to continue. And I'm very appreciative of Pam and her staff and the work and the teachers and the principals and all the monumental work. We look back 2 years ago as to where we were 2 years ago with the state of curriculum versus how it is today.
And some of the challenges that even C School has is, last year we had new social studies TEKS, the year before that, new science TEKS, the year before that, PLE. So, having to redo the curriculum, we're getting new math TEKS, which are, apparently are going to be quite different from the ones that current. So we know we've got that coming down, and then the resources. So, that adds to the challenge of being where we need to be, because, for example, for math and science, I think we had half the year curriculum, which is why we only were able to do the first semester, because that wasn't up until the fall. So, we have those challenges that we try to work with too, and we try not to pull teachers off campuses too much, but yet we want to give them input. So it's really, it's a balance. It's kind of a dance that we're we have our challenges, but, we're working through them, and we're learning from them and trying to make it better as we go. So it's a work, curriculum is always a work in progress, and try to make it very good and perfect, but it is always a work in progress.
Okay, Ms. Lilly, one last time.
Well, Dr. Murphy just said something, and I just want to correct if there's a misinterpretation. No one is saying to get rid of the common assessments. No one is saying to get rid of the mock assessments. We're just trying to make you aware of the frustration that's out there that's being placed on the teachers. And the bottom line is that teachers feel that it keeps adding on to that plate that we already have. And yet we have personnel here, master teachers, that we feel maybe should be taking some of that load off. That is the message. Common assessments are a great tool, but like Ms. Kraft said, it's not the only way that teachers assess strengths and weaknesses. We do that every single day. Mock tests, you've been hearing it time in, time out, that there's too many. Why do we need two? Why not just one? And the biggest thing is this year, because we don't know what STAR is going to look like, and you said it. We're shooting in the dark. It's a hit and miss. Add that to the teachers trying to teach more rigor, follow the standard, more rigor, and you're adding on and piling on, and pretty soon teachers are going to explode, and that's what's happening. Next year, we have, I think, a better idea. Once we see the STAR, we have a better idea as teachers. We feel more confident. Okay, I know exactly what I have to do. I know exactly what I have to teach. Because right now, even with that standard, it's like, okay, it's the standard's there. It's telling us what to do, but how rigorous do we have to go? Well, we know the readiness is a lot more than the supportive. So all that piled on, that's what you're hearing. But nobody's saying get rid of the common assessments or the mock. Maybe limit the mock to one a year. And we were doing common assessments, Dr. Murphy, basically not common, but assessments way before you came. As teachers, you do end of the unit assessments, you do chapter assessments, you're assessing to see if they got what you taught, whether it be in a 2 week period or in a 6 week period. So we were doing it. Again, not maybe common, not all fifth grade make doing the same common assessment or performing administering. But that's the message. So I just wanted to correct that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Maxson.
I just wanted to make a comment in defense of the of the mocks at our campus. We did have the mock in the fall, and we administered it so that we took a break in the middle, and then we tested again afterwards. The second mock, we tested a different way. We went straight from 8:30 to 12:30. So having the two mocks did give us a chance to try different things to see how each worked. So that was a benefit. Also, the mocks gave the teachers a chance to test in English one time and Spanish the next time to see how they felt kids would do better on STAR. So in defense of the two mocks, it did help us out in those two ways.
Thank you. Okay. Any more comments? That's it? Okay. That's it. Tony, next agenda item.
Item E is TASB.
Thank you, everyone. I'm sorry. Thank you, everyone, for contributing. And thank you, Ms. Fierro.
Thank you.
Sorry, Tony.
Thank you very much.
Has
the
update 91?
As listed.
Wanted to save her voice.
Good evening, Madam Chair, committee members, trustees, Dr. Murphy. I have before me update 91, and this update was previously presented to you in full at our last meeting, and I know that there were several questions about some of the policies, and so I'd like to know if you want me to present them all over again, or do you want me just to address those policies that have questions for update 91?
I think I'm the fly in the ointment. I have a lot of questions.
As I presented all the policies, there were three questions that I received from the committee that evening on policies, changes, and so I've already touched base with TASB on them, and I do have responses.
Hold on a second. Ms. Laurie, do you prefer that we ask our questions and can you address those questions?
We could do it that way, that's what I'm saying.
That would be easiest. Yeah. Instead of you just going through, everything, why don't we just give our specific...
Okay, well, I can go ahead, if you want, address the three questions that I prepared, that I know that were raised that evening, and then if there's any additional questions, we can go ahead and address those.
Is that the FAA?
Martha, why don't you just let them answer your question? Ask your question.
Okay, Ms. Start with questions then. Ms. Laurie, have?
Sure. I can ask you a question on CHG legal. If we have included, that is, and I'm referencing the vantage points about the district's authority to exercise eminent domain. We need to be proactive there and send a letter to the state by December the 31st of 2012.
Yes, and I talked to Steve Blanco. He is aware of that and he is working.
Okay, good. That's my first question. CV local, under facilities, it is facilities construction. When I'm reading this, change orders, and it's on page 47. Change orders permitted by law shall be approved by the board or its designee prior to any changes being made in the approved plans or the actual construction of the facility. I don't feel comfortable with that. Everything I have heard from the board that was seated at the time of the building of the high school indicated there were a lot of problems with doing business like this, that the board should have had the say on it, and we would not be building some of the things we're building today had the administration not given a green light to do things that weren't good with the board. And so I'd like...
The only problem with that, Ms. Searles, is some of them are real quick, and maybe you should make a minimum or a maximum.
Yeah, look, it's...
contract values over 10,000. How about maybe something like that?
Yeah, so, yes.
But, I mean, everything I hear is telling me, oh, you know, the board did not have the say on the change orders, and so everything went bad, and that's why we're building another gym, because the other one didn't have seating for everybody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that seemed like the problem to me, and I think we need to come back with some different wording other than the board's designee.
We can work on that and bring it back.
Okay.
Can we also not just put a dollar amount, put a significant change after the plan has been approved? Let's say if there was not necessarily a dollar amount, but if there was a change within the approval of the plan.
That's
but then
what,
how would
yeah,
you, how
was
would you define old, significant change?
That was the old wording, Armando. Do you see down?
Yeah, the 47.
Uh-huh. Change orders shall be approved by the board prior to any changes being made in the approved plans or actual construction of the mm-hmm. facility.
And that is what this new policy is saying, that it the board needs to approve it unless you designate someone else.
Okay.
And if you haven't, then it is the board's responsibility. So that is the change in this policy.
Okay. Well, I think the change should not be the designee, just the board.
Well, Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Lori, I think we need to kind of give them some kind of leeway, because otherwise we're going to be involved in every single little construction issue. And some of those could be very minor. And we're going to delay the construction. You know, for example, if it's going to make a change order, it's a $200, $300, $500 that needs to be done for sure. I've never known
a change order to be that minimal in my life.
Well, we had a lot at the high school.
And that would be absolutely micromanaging on the board's part.
Yeah, and it dealt with certain issues like, what were they? Just for example, over at some of the rooms on the west side of the curved wing. Small stuff.
I have a case in point. We had boilers that went bad because of a very small brass fitting that, due to value engineering, mm-hmm. was not a brass fitting, it was a piece of junk fitting, and that is minimal.
Yeah.
But somebody took it upon themselves to say, oh, we're going to get the cheap stuff, and, you know,
no.
We're paying for it now.
We're paying big time now.
I'm sorry. The reason those boilers went out was because we didn't put in the management system
Do you remember them showing us specifically the
that's,
little...
That's correct, but because the management system wasn't there, we weren't alerted to as the system started to degrade. And the management system was an expensive item that was taken out.
So
if it wasn't
those
fitting,
couplings
it was the, it
would
was
have
the,
been made better had the management
system... No, the couplings would have been the same. It would, there would have been a management system on the heat pumps that would have alerted us quicker that they were going down, so we wouldn't have lost all four the way we did. And that was taken out in a change order. And it would be that sort of thing that absolutely, and you need that, I mean, I hope we all understand we have a different administration now.
Absolutely.
We're not going to do the majority of these things. And I would hope that Sergio's point about there being some leeway regarding this.
I would think that possibly the leeway would be either contact the chairman of the facilities committee, contact the board president, put it in Eagle Notes like you always do.
Sure,
you know, if anybody's
absolutely.
Got a problem with that, contact me. If not, I'm moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then have it on a consent agenda for information only, that on this date, this, this, and this were done.
How about we go with what you said, the 10,000? I mean, not the... What's up here on the floor construction valued at? How about we look at any change orders above that as well has to be approved by the board?
How about above 5,000?
Can administration take this back and work on it and bring it back? There's going to be no change orders in the next 30 days.
Okay. That's the good news.
If administration can bring back something, let me work with Ernesto and maybe talk to our CMA.
Doc, the part where it says change orders permitted by law, what does it mean by law? Are you talking about like ADA compliance law? What kind of law are we talking? That's, to me, that right there is governing something completely different.
Is there such thing as an illegal change order?
What do you mean by law?
There's no such thing as an illegal change order from the standpoint of federal or local law. I think the reference may be from maybe policy or something within the board, because you guys control the change orders, you know, and we have to bring the change orders to you for so that you're aware and so we can get it approved. Something. If there was to be a change order, or you actually become the ones that create the change order, you know what I'm saying? That's how a change order develops in new construction. Anything that has to do with policy of law is maybe the reference could be in that if it's violating some code, then that's what you can't do a change order that's going to violate that code or something like that. Maybe that could be the only thing.
The administration can take this back and bring it back in a month. And I really want to get Oscar Venegas' point of view and maybe our architect, and then give it to you guys for review.
Okay.
I've also got DFPB local on the notice of that's page
51.
The notice of proposed non-renewal. From the vantage points, I saw it was 10 days before the last day of instruction. And is that correct?
That's correct. And what I had explained before is that for this year, we're going to stay with the 45 days that has been in place forever and a day. And next year, the 10 days will be in effect.
Okay.
This is because we've heard from teacher unions and the contracts, the teacher contracts that are currently in place were approved under the 45-day rule, even though the law has changed now. So we just want to go ahead and stay with the 45 days for this year.
And yet I see that that's not what, that was scratched out in the language of the policy. It's redlined.
It's accordance with the law now.
So, yes. So just accordance with the law?
Yes.
Okay, and we leave it at that?
Yes,
we're
leaving it at the 10 days, but by practice, we're just going to do that for this year, the 45 days. Now, this policy also was one that I believe Mr. Rodriguez questioned the last time, in the fact that now in this policy, it states that the board can designate an attorney to hold the non-renewal hearings on behalf of the board.
Yes.
And I know the comment was, well, you know, we've got our legal counsel. And I believe Tony has provided you a sheet with some information on the bottom there. Because basically, in some of the sessions that I've attended, some of the trainings, it's stating that the attorney may not be employed by a district.
Yeah.
And so there's a laundry list of criteria that the attorney, for example, it says neither the attorney nor the attorney's law firm may be serving as an agent or representative of a district, a teacher in dispute between a district and a teacher. Basically, it's not a school attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So in reality, you know, to some of those in education, it doesn't make any sense that you're going to appoint an attorney really that has no ties to a teacher, to any teacher organization or any other school district. So really you're talking about a non-school attorney. And so basically that is what the language that is provided there. And it is written into the Texas Education Code.
I also had a question on FO local, the student discipline. I saw we had to have signs posted about the video equipment in use. Do we have those?
On FO
local? FO local, and let's see if I can. It'd be on page 39 in the vantage points, the last sentence.
The district must continue to post signs notifying students and parents about the district's use of video or audio equipment. You see that in the box for the vantage points? And this would be under FO local policy consideration.
Page 39.
Mm-hmm. In the box, in the gray box. And I don't know that it's mandatory because it's a local.
It's not written in FO on page 65 and 66.
FO local is the student discipline.
Uh-huh. And on page 39.
It says four districts with provisions on video and audio monitoring. Recommended text broadens the use, so it's not required.
Not required, so we don't need to do that. We're good then.
I don't know that, you know, for example, the high school has the video monitoring. Mm-hmm. You know, we can certainly, if we need to put, you know, something up.
I just didn't know if it was, I know we do that, but I didn't know if it was a hand in glove issue where if you did it, you needed to post.
Well, we certainly can bring that one up as well as the go from there.
I think that you need to post it.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is also a policy that was questioned at our last meeting, and basically I believe what I heard was that, Dr. Murphy had mentioned, this was a question that Dr. Murphy had on the revision, where it says before a student under 18 is assigned to detention outside regular school hours, notice shall be given to the student's parent. And I know that Dr. Murphy mentioned that sometimes, you know, contact is, they are unable to make contact with the parent. So he wanted it changed to a reasonable effort to provide notice. However, in talking to TASB, they felt that if the student is under 18, that we should communicate with the parent. Because they said, for example, if the detention is after school, the student rides the bus, they're under 18, so after detention, how are they going to get home? And so they were saying that it would be in the best interest of the district that then they should arrange another discipline, another manner
of
discipline.
An alternative, yeah. Yes. If you can't contact
them. But that the parent, if the parent was not able to be contacted, and that was what
I disagree.
Recommended.
I totally disagree on many levels. It sets us up as a liability. If we say we shall, and then one gets through or we didn't, and then the parent gets upset. You know, assistant principals across the district, if we had them all here, I'm sure they'd agree. They try every effort to call parents about discipline.
But I think what she's saying is, if you can't get them, make them do something at lunchtime when they're at school. Because I know it would make me very mad if, you know, my kid's supposed to be home at 3 o'clock and she's not home.
Worried.
And now I'm freaked out and the kid's missing. And, well, he's only at detention and we couldn't get a hold of you. You know, the secretary was sick that day and she couldn't call your house.
We have situations.
Parents upset.
We have situations right now where kids get suspended and parents don't.
I'm sure those kids are happy.
But we can't get a hold of parents.
How about the truant officer?
Good times.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just very worried about blanket statements like that. That's why I like every effort, reasonable effort, just to cover us instead of thou shalt, because then we're legally liable for every assistant principal.
The other side of that is we shall, or if we can't, we will. Here's all our alternative to after-school detention. Because there is, I mean, I know my kids had to stay in at lunchtime, you know. You're going to eat your lunch, and then you're going to put your face in the corner or something. I know our mom would never had to.
Me and Powell would hang out there.
I know. Not to belabor that point, I feel strongly about the alternative, as TASB does. On page 38, this is back to the vantage points. FM legal, the board must appoint a concussion oversight team.
We have that.
Okay, we have it?
Yes, ma'am.
Good. When did we appoint them?
This summer when those rules came out, and it's run through the SHAC, and we have
and
our
we
trainers on it. We have all of that.
Okay, good.
If you, you know, we certainly can bring that as an update to the board to show you.
I just wanted to make sure, you know, that we were in compliance and we had our concussion
yes.
team.
This was brought
Scott
up
Brooks is
this
on
was
it.
Brought up before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We followed the law on that. I'll put it in a Friday packet note for you guys so you can see exactly how we've done that.
And that was, those were my questions.
Ms. Searles, may I, on the must give an alternate assignment, can I just go back and talk to the principals and the assistant principals on that and come back on that? And just talk to you.
Talk to TASB.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And there was one more, I believe it was policy PFAA. That was on instructional material selection and adoption. Mm-hmm. I believe there was much discussion over parental access and process for protest and hearing. And that was something that I guess since TASB is removing that, that you all wanted to make sure that it remained. However, in talking to TASB, they are telling me that parents have a right to have a legal right to look at the instructional materials at any time. And the reason they're taking it out is because in policy EF legal, they say, you know, that inherent right of a parent to parental access is delineated in EF legal. So they said there's no need for it to be in here. Under process for protest and hearing, they're saying that any teaching and instructional materials adopted by the district, if there is a parent that does not, that wishes to complain, that we have the avenue of the public complaint form that could be submitted to the superintendent's office. They also have EFA local, that's another policy that delineates how to challenge material, for example, a movie that the student is watching in class or a book in the library, not necessarily the instructional materials, but so they say they've already have avenues set up for parents to be able to complain, and then the access, they're saying, you know, that's their inherent right by law, and that it isn't stated in the education code. So it's okay to remove it off of here, off of this policy.
I have one other question under, it's, I believe it's EHAC, but it's also EFAA, that the school districts are now going to provide instruction in personal financial literacy, including instruction in completing the federal student aid application. Ms. Spear, I see you nodding.
Yes.
Okay.
They're going to add that to the economics courses.
Okay, good.
I'm sorry, I didn't know you were talking about
I saw you're nodding, thinking, yes, that's probably happening.
Yes.
That's, thank you, Ms. Chairman. That's
Mr. Rodriguez.
What I was asking about that, and I guess it was more about the hearings to making sure that we had a process in place, or that when we went through, let's say, got a certain textbooks adopted, that there would be some type of hearing. In other words, if they needed to do that. That was part of the question on
EFAA.
And if the board's okay with that, I mean, I don't have a problem the way it is. If that's what my thing is, if we have a public hearing, it's okay. We allow the public's input, sort of like we do the first and the other stuff, if we should do that or not. And I don't know what the rest of the board feels. I don't have a problem either way. I just thought, since everything's being taken out and since we have so much red line, It just was alarming.
But their point was that it's accommodated in other policies as far as, you know, what, you know, for the parents to be able to have access, for the parents to complain.
And that's under legal or under local? Is it EFAA legal?
It is EF legal.
So it's under the legal part?
It's EF just... legal and EFA local.
Then why? Okay.
And then, of course, the public complaint is in I don't have the policy number to that, but it is under Section G, which is student related.
Ultimately, the accountability is going to be to a superintendent. So as long as we get the correct textbooks and from there on. I don't have a problem. I was just very alarmed that we wanted to redline about 3-4 pages, 5,
actually.
Yeah, it's about, yeah, 5, yeah. 6.
But you feel confident, Ms. Carrasco, that all of this is covered elsewhere? They just moved it around.
Okay. That's all I have now, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any further questions, comments, concerns? No? Mr. Gordon? Next agenda
item. Item F, task B, update 92.
Okay, task B, update 92 was very narrow in focus. It was not like our other updates. This just included local policies. And basically, there is three local policies. Policy DFF local, which is termination of employment, was deleted. Now, what happened is they took the language from that policy and made it two policies. So now we've got DFFA local and DFFB local. And so what they separated out was the fact that because of the legislative changes that came about, now there's new, additional criteria or rules for reduction in force. And so basically what they did using these two policies, the A refers to a RIF based on financial exigency, and DFFB relates to reduction because of a program change. And basically on this policy, what happened was that they went ahead and brought in some criteria, rearranged the criteria for making a decision in for reduction of force. For example, now they reordered the criteria so that seniority is applied last. You know, now you look at performance, you take into consideration the evaluation, any disciplinary information for the last 36 months. You also take into consideration if a teacher has extra duties, extra duty assignments. And so there's more criteria that you look at when you're taking into account a reduction in force. And of course, that DFFA local that deals with financial exigency also outlines the furloughs and how to reduce cost of furloughs. And I think that was something, a trend that Dr. Murphy said got going, and because they did say it's a 6-day furlough. So, you know, 6 days was what we had used also. So. It explains that. So what it did, it took that DFF local and just split it into two, and saying this one if you're having financial issues, and this one if you're having program changes. And so that's the extent of update 92. Any questions on that?
Mr. Corona.
But this allows us, it says we have to actually put our own policy as to what we want to do with these, right?
Well, basically, if we adopt this right now, if we, you know, as we go through the readings and adopt this update, it's already going to set out the, it's got the policy already written in there with the criteria.
With the criteria? So how does it, with respect, for example, the reduction in force on the continuing contract employees or teachers?
They did not address continuing contract in this update, so really it's not included. However, they did include it just as an FYI. It's just like, you know, keep it on the back burner so that you know that you would have to develop a policy, you're right, for board-adopted policy in regards to employees with continuing contracts. Now,
so we can do it, we just need to come up with our own policy.
Yes, for continuing contracts. And the only reason they included it in here, and they specifically said it's not part of this update, but keep it in mind, and they said that it would be rare that would happen because continuing contracts are associated with tenure. And they said that this would be, you know, something that that normally would not happen in a school district. It says reduction of employees on continuing contract is relatively untested area. So it's always suggesting a cautious approach. In other words, this would be something that, of course, would be handled through legal counsel. And they say it's not too common that you would go and have a reduction with someone on a continuing contract.
Were you looking at adding something?
Well, no, I just wanted to get an opinion from our attorney whether it would be feasible or we should even entertain that. I mean, I don't foresee it, but maybe we need to get something from your office, Martha, about how many of these people are in that category. Maybe.
I can include something in the Friday packet on that as to how many teachers we
continuing
have
on contracts.
Continuing contracts.
And then see if maybe, you know, I don't foresee it, but.
I don't either.
You know, the legislature might go crazy.
Yeah.
We do have teachers on continuing contracts. I know that there were several that retired last year, so. You know, our numbers are dwindling. Of course, you know, we don't issue those type of contracts anymore. So I'll go ahead and let you know how many we have. And just to read off a sentence here, it says that it's not expected that many districts will pursue reductions of employees on continuing contracts. So that's why, you know, it refers you to legal counsel if that were to happen.
Okay. Thank you, Martha. That's all I have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. No more questions? No. Thank you. Thank you, Martha. Next agenda item, Tony.
Item G, review of revisions to ED local organizations and instruction.
Chairperson Gonzalez, committee members, board members, audience. Page 76 of your blue book, the board had asked administration to go back and draft language to bring into existence into policy the pre-K-8 concept, pre-K-8 configuration. We did consult with legal. We also looked through our policies, and we found the best place to possibly add a paragraph was at ED Local, found on page 76. Administration is recommending that this paragraph in blue be added that shows that the instructional grades offered are pre-K, kinder, and grades 1 through 12, and that these grade arrangements can be found in pre-K 5, K 5, pre-K 8, K 8, 6, 8, and 9, 12. And within the pre-K 8 and K 8 configs, grades PK 5 are elementary, and grades 6 through 8 are considered middle, and that all CISD policies and regulations exist and are implemented reflecting these instructional grade arrangements.
We don't have any K-5 or K-8 schools.
Well, we do have K-5. We have we have had K-5 in which we've had campuses that didn't have pre-K. Mm-hmm. So in talking with, actually with our legal, Steve, he just said, you know, just in case, put K-5, just in case, put K-8.
If I might, and I was talking to the president right now, looking at, is there possibly later on when we start getting more affluent neighborhoods that that area would not allow for pre-K funding, or are we just doing that?
That's exactly correct. We might wind up with a situation like that. Last year, we didn't have pre-K. I think it was at Garcia.
And they that was just because of a district.
Right.
Maneuver, not necessarily.
Right, and it was more just a location. So we very well might have situations like that. So that's why we have language that says K-8 and pre-K-8, K-5 and pre-K-5, just to make sure we're covered. Okay. So then we'll consider this a first reading, is that correct? And
yes.
Then we'll bring it back for second and then go. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Tony.
Item H, update status on unfilled personnel positions. Ms. Cutoff.
On items H and I don't know if you want to go into executive session. I want to.
Personnel?
Yes, but should we go to JK&L?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, let's go to J. Item J.
Item J is a report regarding positive behavior and academic achievement assembly hosted by NED. This is Akita.
Good evening. This evening, Mr. Solis will be doing the presentation.
Chairperson Gonzalez, committee members, Dr. Murphy, good evening. My name is David Solis, and I am one of the district accountants. The reason that I am here is to request for the board's consideration and approval of a 45-minute motivational multisensory assembly to be held at Bill Childers Elementary that will inspire students to become champions at school and in life. The NED program will teach our students to never give up, encourage others to do your best, NED. It is a customizable program in which an anti-bully theme can be incorporated, and this falls in line with our No Place for Kids initiative. In your packet, there are three pricings, a standard, a deluxe, and a pay-it-forward program. We're electing to go with the pay-it-forward program. So instead of paying a flat fee, the NED show is available at no cost. And so you ask, what's the catch? The catch is that we allow the assembly or the vendor to provide NED message items for a week at the school for students to purchase. So since they are soliciting sales, in following the district policy, I have to bring to the board to seek your approval.
If I might, Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
This was put on my committee, and I said, to put it on your committee,
thank
but I
you.
Wanted to.
Thanks a lot. Well, I want to put it back on his.
What I wanted to look at, and I don't think it's on here, was necessary. I mean, more the policy, so that way we don't have to look at this at a case by case, looking at not necessarily the fiasco, but the policy dealing with the cookies, Girl Scout cookies. My thing is, I think what we should do is look at the policy where it addresses, I guess, the ability for students to do some of these activities if it benefits the students, and not necessarily open up the whole policy where you allow
one but not the other.
Yeah. But to allow some type of wording where we just allow the students, if it's going to be, you know, Girl Scout cookies or maybe some of the, you know, the benefits of students in our community where it might be Pee Wee football or something that benefits the kids. I don't have a problem with it, but I don't want to be looking at something like this at a case by case basis.
Okay. I have a question, Martha. What is, since you deal with fundraisers and all that, what is your take on all this?
Well, what we had requested of the campuses is when they're holding any type of campus activity, not necessarily just fundraising activities, that they submit the documentation for review, just to ensure that we were meeting different guidelines that we have to adhere to, but also because many times we'll have parents calling, you know, so-and-so happened or this and this, and we don't know what activity they're referring to. So now that we know what, like, this presentation is going on, then we go ahead and they're more informational for us than anything else. However, with the organizational message that went out in January as well, reminding everyone of the vendor situation, it was all hand in hand, and so we were, we definitely needed guidance as to how we were going to be handling this. But as far as the presentation, well, it's a no place for hate type of activity that is obviously something that we are promoting. However, it's the sale. Do we pay the fee? Do we, so that they can, the children can still benefit from it, but adhere to the policy that doesn't allow us to have vendors sell items at the campus. We need some guidance.
See, Armando, this one, if I might, is different than Girl Scout cookies because this is profit to a company. This isn't a kid getting merits or something like that. This is actually profit to the company.
Yeah, but it's student-based benefit. I mean, it supplements the total fee that we would. I'm just seeing if there's anything legal that we could do at a local policy to address issues that might come where it's not a case-by-case basis. Because let's say it... I don't know, did I talk to you about this?
Right, and I apologize, you did say that you wanted the policy on here as well, and I remember you talking about
that. And my thing is, okay, well, they're making a presentation, and so we might allow them, but, okay, then, you know, maybe Girl Scouts might come and do a presentation sometime.
True.
And benefit. So we're just opening up a can of worms, and my thing is, I don't have a problem if it's going to benefit students, then it's okay. I just don't want to open up where we used to have, selling candles or A-Lons or stuff like that, that type of thing. If it's student-based, what I would like to see is our attorney look at that policy and see if we could address it where they can.
Add verbiage?
Yes. Where, you know, it's going to benefit our kids.
What is the policy, Mark?
It's GKB local, and the blurb that was, sent out in the organizational announcement basically says, promotional activities, school facilities shall not be used to advertise, promote, sell tickets, or collect funds for any school, non-school related purpose without prior approval of the superintendent or designee. Non-school related organizations may use school facilities only in accordance with GKD. And that's facilities. GKD addresses facilities.
I think you might also need to look at FJ local because if memory serves, that...
Can you come up to this?
Yeah. You might also need to look at policy FJ local because, again, if memory serves, I believe that policy has verbiage that basically prohibits anybody from soliciting directly to students.
Mm-hmm.
And so there might need to be a review of that.
Ms. Patsy.
Mr. Solis,
do we have any idea how much each little yo-yo costs?
I don't, but maybe Ms.
I do.
You do?
It's $6 approximately for the yo-yo, and there's 400 kids. Between $2,500 and $3,000 for every student in the school if they want one.
Yeah. So each yo-yo will be $6. I guess our question when we did this this activity, it was more, do I pay $1,300 or do I allow the vendor just to leave yo-yos on top of our counters? They're not going to be there to sell it. If it sells, it sells. If it doesn't, it doesn't. They're not there to make money. They're just there to kind of go pay it forward so they can go to the next school. It's all student-based for No Place for Hate, encourage the students, increase self-confidence. It's like last year, 2 years ago, we paid $1,100 for Bully Busters to come to BCE. That's a lot of money. But at the same time, the message was across. This is for my entire campus. And that's what we're trying to keep within No Place for Hate activity. It's all
student-based. It's all about our students speaking up, about taking care of one another. It's about developing that self-confidence, self-esteem, and the pride. And that's what, basically what NED is about.
Questions?
If I may add, the only thing that I can think of related to this whole matter that needs to be considered is that if for whatever reason the vendor provides a service free of charge, then we'll need to kind of put a dollar figure to that and basically run it through as a donation to the district, because basically it's a donation of service. And so that's something else that we might need to look at.
Madam Chair, I personally would rather see us just pay the $1,500, stay within our policy. Every kid gets a yo-yo and they get their message and everybody's happy. And what about the kid who doesn't have the $6 to get the yo-yo? Mm-hmm. You know, he'd like to have the yo-yo, he can't have the yo-yo, and you know, now he has to cry at lunch.
But what if a student wants a yo-yo? Yeah.
They can't get one, yeah, and then, I mean, he feels bullied because he didn't get the yo-yo.
I know, but let's look at it at both sides of, like, what if a student wants a yo-yo, but they're not going to be able to purchase a yo-yo because... Mm-hmm.
Well, see, and the message is not really about the yo-yos. It's actually about the no place for hate and the encouragement. It's not that they're saying we're here because we're selling yo-yos. That's not the message that they're trying to get across.
But that's what every kid comes home.
No, and I know kids are kids.
Yeah, they don't care about the message. They care about that yo-yo.
Yes, sir.
That's all.
At the end of the...
Yeah, at the end of the day when everything's done, I got the yo-yo, she didn't get the yo-yo.
My parents didn't.
And now we're going to go home and we're going to fight, and I'm going to get that yo-yo. yeah, kids are kids.
Is that an option?
About paying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's number two.
Definitely. Can I have some help on that? it's an option, definitely. You can pay the $1,300 if that's...
Well, what does the $1,300 bring?
It's actually $1,500.
Is that the premium?
Yes. That's the deluxe.
And what is the deluxe?
Each K-6 student that attends the assembly receives an anything message yo-yo. The standard fee is the $1,200 net.
Okay, but you're saying, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Yes.
The one that you're talking about, Ms. Moreno, you're saying they can come do it, but then they set up their yo-yos
or they leave it there? They just leave a certain amount of yo-yos in the office, and whatever sells or doesn't, we just put them in the bag and we forward it to wherever they're at, their location.
Okay.
They're not there to... My
suggestion is if you have the money, if you have budgeted for it, it should come.
And that's why we rent this route, because we really don't have the money. Because money wise, it was beneficial for us to kind of just have them come and present at no cost. And then whatever yo-yos are made, whatever money was made from the yo-yos, that would be.
Assuming that it was approved, so if they sold one yo-yo and
that's
put all the yo-yos in the closet, they'd be okay?
That's it. That they get one yo-yo, that's what it is.
Superintendent's fund could fund this if the board desires.
So are you going to fund if some other campus wants, and then they'll will you fund it for one campus?
But you know what?
We
do have a superintendent's fund for small projects like this, and we certainly could get a request from DCE funded if another school wanted to turn in a certain request.
Mr. Corona.
How about, can we ask them for an alternative to their three standard options?
Well, that's a conversation we can probably have with them. I mean, if there's an option four, I think there's three options, am I right? Yeah. If there's an option four,
okay. There are three options on our website.
How many kids would attend? And you're going to get every K-6 student or K-6? But yours is five.
Entire campus.
Wait, how many kids do you have at your...
467.
467. So if we're paying, that's $6 for every kid, that's $2,500 roughly. But that's almost 500 yo-yos. How about if we tell them charges, you know, less than that and just bring...
Well, they would be charging us. It's $1,300. We'd be winning already.
$1,500
gets a yo-yo.
$1,500,
yes.
How
the price for the yo-yo?
So that's basically...
$3,000. $3 a yo-yo, half price.
And all the students are going to attend?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. I want a yo-yo.
I do, too. Remember Walk the Dog?
I said we pay for it. Find the money somewhere.
The other issue, if I might mention,
yes, sir,
is just how do we address the issue like on the other, and that's what I wanted to
the other campuses?
We'll bring the policy.
It's very easy to say yes, but how do we address this?
Well, this actually is a student-based presentation. It's not about the yo-yo. It's about the actual
widget.
You know, if they have something to sell us that's a presentation, we'll consider buying it. I don't see an issue.
No, I'm just saying, looking at the policy, so that way, if it's
going to come back
student-based or if it's going to benefit.
I mean, we don't have these all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, just take them up as they come.
We're going to start getting some creative ideas coming to us now that we just.
Well, and when they get creative, we'll just.
Actually, we're not.
We think they're
this.
Too creative. We're just.
You guys are actually telling us that you're not going to approve the pay forward plan.
Right. Because it does not comply with
that's
the
correct.
Policy.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And so then I will have to come in and mm-hmm. assist, which I can do.
Then we're going to buy cookies for everybody now.
Which you can do.
I'm just saying we need to address the policy as a whole because I think it's just something.
Well, that covers the policy.
This policy. But I'm saying that the issue of allowing some of our kids, if it benefits the community or the students' development throughout the process, I don't have a problem with them selling Girl Scout cookies. No.
But, and well, that's but that, yeah. We'd have to change our complete policy around
and that's
that.
What I'm saying. Let's address it where we could address the whole issue and not necessarily a case by case if they start coming up to be creative.
Well, what I'm saying is these cases aren't going to come up very often.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
and the others do.
But I want to address
everybody
that.
Wants to come sell something on campus without necessarily doing something that's student based.
Yeah. But I want to address that part. And if we could look at that policy.
You mean to change that policy?
Well, look at it to see if we could adjust it where it's just student based and not necessarily the whole policy.
Oh. I don't have a mind looking at it. I just don't think, you know, I don't think there's that many of these situations that'll come up. I don't see a problem taking a look at it.
We can bring the policy back next month.
That's you okay with the chair.
Please.
Yes, sir. Next agenda item.
Item K, Superintendent Evaluation Policy Review.
Chairperson Gonzalez, committee members, board members. Starting on page 77 and going for quite a while through the back of the book are the policies, both ours and the requests of districts regarding these. Steve Blanco has also written a memo on it, and as he wrote, as I mentioned in the Friday packet, our policies do compare very favorably to the two last superintendent of the year districts and the two last school board of the year districts. And in talking with Steve thinks we're very solid right where we are. And so whatever the board desires.
Can we look at redlining it and making it better? And then you can bring it back to
it? It's good as it stands. We brought it back twice already. The feeling is that our policies as they stand are correct, robust, and even better than the last two boards of the year and last two superintendents of the year. As he pointed out, only Northside ISD, which is the superintendent of the year this year, John Folks, has a different BJA, and it's because they are actually using an older version of the TASB policy as opposed to the newer version. And Steve highly recommends that we stay with the newer version as opposed to the older.
Okay.
Any questions, comments, concerns? No?
We went over this policy about 4 or 5 years ago, and it seems to be, I don't think there's anything. Actually, right around that time is when we really started, and TASB really started paying attention to the actual superintendent evaluations. Prior to that.
Right, there was a large update actually in 2006.
Yeah.
That's probably when you went over it last. Yeah.
And even right after that, what they were presenting to us as samples of evaluations were just horrible. It hasn't been until like the last 3 or 4 years that they really honed in on actually better,
and in the
better evaluations.
And in the superintendent's wheel, I'm bringing this forth to you because simply it says TASB recommends it every year we review it.
Is it to review it to make adjustment changes?
Yeah, do whatever.
Or is it to review it just so that way we're knowledgeable of the policy?
Both. And so this year what we did was we looked at the last two boards of the years and the last two superintendents of the years, and we compared them. We looked favorably. So, and we look even better than a couple of them. And we had legal look at them. Steve's very satisfied with them. So if it's all right with the board, we'll just continue on it, and then I'll bring it back next year, and we'll review it again. Unless there's something that...
Okay. Tony, next agenda item.
Item L is the graduation update.
Chairperson Gonzalez, committee members, board members, audience, I've given you a one-pager on a graduation update for June 2012, and there are some changes this year, especially with the incoming of our Northwest Early College. And I actually do have both high school principals on standby to answer any calls if I need to step out and call them if you have any specific questions. I did speak at length on Friday with Yvette and Jim. Very excited about Northwest. They have been saving their money. They really wanted to go downtown to Chavez Theater. They have Dr. Natalicio, president of UTEP, to be the guest speaker. She's already given a tentative okay of that. Dr. Rosser will be here from the Greater Texas Foundation, the interim EPCC president. They've really worked hard on getting everything ready. That is Saturday evening, June 2nd at 6 p.m. Yes, ma'am.
I noticed that Northwest has a really detailed on their graduation. And kind of Leo High School is pretty more general. Do we know who the commencement speaker will be for kind of Leo High School?
We won't have a special speaker. It'll be the valedictorian and the salutatorian. I talked to Jim, and the program for Canyon-Teo High School will be as it is in years past. There's nothing really new. So that's why his is a little shorter. I did want to get in that Tinson Events is going to set up the stage as it has been in the past. We did settle with them all our issues regarding the track, or at least it's at a standstill to the point where we're continuing on. And we'll be taking special care not to tear up the track as they set up and take down in June.
Is there anything they can put over?
Yeah, they'll put those over. Although I got to be honest with you, when I watched them put the turf down, they rolled over that track all day long. Yeah. So, but we will take special care again regarding that.
Okay. Any more questions?
No. I do on the high school, and I am just blank for the word, just absolutely blank. We usually always go to St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Yeah, and what's the word?
Well, they pray for the kids before they graduate.
Sister?
It's
the senior mass.
It's a senior mass.
Okay, yeah, the word for it. I don't see that. Yeah, there's a real word for it, though, but I can't think of it.
Jim didn't mention that, although what Jim basically told me is it's the same as last year, so if they did it last year, I'm sure. I'll put that in the Friday. I'll find out.
Okay.
I'll put it in Friday.
Because I think it's very important.
Yes, ma'am. So if the board is okay, I'll take this as we're okay, because I don't see them as standing by.
Part of it, though.
Well, sir, you're probably
we can't sanction that part of it. We can't be...
No.
Yeah.
I'll just find out
just
about
long
it
as
and give
it's,
you a note. But I'll take it from the board that we're okay with this, and I can alert the principals that they can move forward back without bringing it
yeah.
back.
Yeah, fine with it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Ms. Tony.
Do you want to go to item 3 for community input or back to...
Adjournment.
No,
I think we had
community input. We're done. No more community input. That's it. Okay, next agenda item.
We're going to close session for item H. Status of unfilled personnel positions and item I, the alignment of the administrator employment contracts. And the time is now 8:37 p.m.
And now hit record again.
Okay, we're back from executive session. The time is 10:05.
Right. You're saying we're going to recommend to the board items H and I.
Okay. We're going to recommend to the item, to the for action on agenda items G, H and I.
Right. To the full board.
To the full board. And this brings us to adjournment in 10:06. Thank you. Good night.
Okay. Sorry. Are we ready?
Yeah.